Welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. Opinions expressed during the show do not reflect the views of ACB Radio or the American Council of the Blind, its members, employees, or board of directors. If you would like to participate in the live show at 2 hours Universal on Wednesdays, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
Experience something so new, so delightfully unexpected.
Wow.
That there's only one word for it.
Wow. That's right, it's wow. Tonight we have Microsoft joining us. We're going to be talking all about Windows Vista. Welcome everybody to Main Menu Live. Hello, Daryl, how are you tonight?
Oh, doing wonderful.
Oh, that's great to hear. And we have Dan Hubbell with us. Hello, Dan.
Good evening.
Good evening, sir. Now, before we get started here, I just wanted to give a little bit of information to all of our listeners that are listening. Tonight on Main Menu Live, we're going to be here for the next 3 hours talking all things Windows Vista. And we're going to be first hearing from Dan Hubbell, as he's on the phone now. And then we'll hear from Matt Campbell and Mike Calvo from Ceratec Corporation all about system access. And then in the third hour, we're going to be, and this will vary a little bit depending on how we, you know, we do here in reference to time, so stick with us. In the third hour or approximation, we will hear from Dolphin. We have about an 8-minute piece that we're going to play for you concerning Dolphin and how for Vista. And then we'll be bringing on Doug Joffre from GW Micro, as well as Aaron. Many of you have spoken to Aaron on the support lines at GW Micro, and we bring him on to Main Menu Live to talk with us also about Windows Vista. So that's what we got coming up tonight. We will be opening up the phone lines shortly after we get through some questions here with Dan, and you'll be able to call in and ask any questions you have of all of our guests. The number... we'll give that out in just a minute because there's no way for me to actually block your calls right now. So I'm not going to give the number out, but we'll give it in a few minutes. Now, Daryl, do you want to give them some information about additional ways in which they can contact us?
Absolutely. We also have MSN/Windows Live Messenger up and running. So feel free to add mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org, and chat with me that way, and I will convey your questions or comments as appropriate.
All right, and we'll get them here, get them live. So, all right, well, Dan, again, welcome to Main Menu. I think this is your first time being here on Main Menu.
And, it is indeed.
Yeah, and we're real happy that you're here. And the first question I had, which is really not on our list. Did you get a chance to watch the live event yesterday?
You know, I didn't actually. I watched some of the highlights on the news last night. I just returned. Yesterday was my first day back in the office after being out all last week at the Assistive Technology Industry Association conference down
right.
in Orlando.
Right.
So I had quite the stack of email I had to sort through.
Oh,
when
I bet.
Got back, so.
Including many from me.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, absolutely. So... yes, it was really interesting to see Bill Gates and Steve getting up there. Of course, Steve, his normal self, I guess that's a good way to put it. He's pretty lively up there on stage.
Rambunctious is what we like to call it.
Yes, that's probably a good word for it, absolutely. So, all right, well, let's see. Let's go ahead and get started into it. I'm pulling up the list of questions here now, and... we also sent these to Dan so that everyone has them in front of them, and we're going to try to get through these as quickly as we can, and in about 15 to 20 minutes, we'll open up the phone lines, and then you can call in and start asking your questions as well. So the first question is, why really do we want Vista, regardless of it, the accessibility improvements?
Well, this is a fantastic question, and obviously something I get asked every time I'm doing a VISTA presentation. This has been the effort of a tremendous number of people over about 3 years since we released Service Pack 2 for XP, although it's been 5 years since we released the first version of XP. The key things that I like to point out here, security is paramount. And I think most folks that work in some sort of organization or have been the victim of some spyware or a virus can appreciate the amount of effort we needed to put into increasing our security. So the security in Windows Vista is paramount, higher than we had in Windows XP, and is really in and of itself should be a selling feature. Although it's not the most sexy of things to talk about, it's probably the most important. Secondary to that is, for a lot of users, the change to the user interface. Now, some of those changes are visual in the way that we represent our menus and our screens. The windows that might open up as far as having kind of a transparent look. But that also goes to the changes that we made in the user interface as far as organization. I use the example from the start menu. In Windows XP, when you clicked on all programs, you began this long chain of expanding windows. If you're a mouse user, it was quite complicated to try and follow this chain of windows. A keyboard user, it was even harder to struggle. Where are you at in this chain and in this hierarchy? We've simplified those UI elements, and now all of your start menu items repopulate within the same window in the start menu. So no longer are you chasing these windows around the screen. We've introduced live search, desktop search, where you can, similar to how the run menu was in Windows XP, when you open the start menu, your keyboard focus immediately starts in the search dialog, and it allows you to begin typing in a word and provides results right in the main start menu window. So again, you don't have to leave the window to actually access the search results.
This is similar to the Windows desktop search tool that's currently available for Windows XP, right? Similarly?
Correct. It's integrated now. Rather
right.
than being a separate download, it's integrated in with the start menu. Although with desktop search, you still had a separate window that those results were displayed in.
Right.
And so now it's actually integrated right into the start menu, so you don't even have to leave the window.
Nice. Okay.
And the search exists not only in the start menu, but it's pervasive throughout the operating system, and it's contextual. So, for example, if you have your documents folder up, what used to be called My Documents, we've finally removed that annoying My from the beginning of it. If you're in your documents folder, there's a search tab at the top where you can input a search term, and it will again do the same sort of a thing. It'll give you live results right in the documents pane, but it's contextual to the window that you're in, so it's actually only searching your documents folder. It's not searching the entire computer. If you're in Windows Media Player, it will only be searching your media files, your music, your video. So search exists everywhere, but again, it's contextual based on where you are, the context of where you are in the operating system.
Okay, great. Thank you. Daryl?
Certainly. Okay. We're getting a lot of messages. I'd just like to address one from David in New Zealand real quick, if I could. And I'm just going to address this real quickly because we already know the answer to this one. He said, can you install programs as a regular, not administrative user? And I told David the answer is definitely not.
The answer actually should be qualified a little bit more than that. For the most part, you're correct, right? You have to be an administrator to install applications. There are some applications that can be installed as a user if they don't affect any system settings. So it's not it's not as simple as, you know, can you, yes or no. Most applications require something to be written to the registry or a system file to be written. Therefore, you're going to need administrative access.
Okay, well, thanks for the clarification there, Dan. And I, my question for you is, what are the suggested system requirements for Vista?
So the baseline requirements for Windows Vista, and this is for the home basic version, which would be kind of the most limited, and I know we'll talk a little bit more about the different flavors of Vista that are available in a few moments, but for the most basic version of Windows, we require 512K of RAM, and I think the minimum processor speed is either 1.2 or 1.5 gigahertz. The recommendations for running any of our Glass Arrow interface or any of the more CPU-intensive features suggest that you have a gig of RAM, and I say 1.5 to 1.7 gigahertz processor. Gigahertz processor. I'm running on my computer. I've got a 1.7 gig processor with a gig of RAM, and I run perfectly. I don't have any trouble. My applications aren't slow. Nothing. The memory that I have doesn't seem to impede my ability to work. There's some people that will tell you that they recommend going up to 2 gig of RAM, and certainly that it never hurts to add more RAM into your computer. If you're using any higher-end applications that are more memory-intensive, I would definitely suggest that anyway. But I think for the most part, I would suggest to people a gig of RAM with the 1.7 gigahertz processor, and you're going to be running just fine.
One of the things that people can do also is they can head on over to www.windowsvista.com, and there's a tool there that will allow them to check and find out if their machine is Vista ready. Right, Dan?
That's correct. And it actually breaks down the system requirements much more granularly than just RAM and processor speed. It'll tell you whether or not your video card will support DirectX 10 so that you can run the new Glass interface. It will tell you whether your networking card is sufficient. It'll actually look at every hardware component in your computer system and even some applications and tell them whether or not they're compatible and whether it recommends an upgrade or an increase in memory or whatnot. So it's actually a very comprehensive tool. And like you said, that website is windowsvista.com.
Well, I can tell you right now that my laptop and my desktop machines in my house are not Vista ready. So we're saving our pennies to do a bunch of purchasing of computers this year. It's going to be a very costly year for us, but it needed to be done anyway. That's what I keep telling my wife anyway.
Yeah, it was funny because I was actually reading the newspaper today saying that computer sales were down over the holidays because a lot of people were anticipating this launch and delaying the purchase of their computers until after launch. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next 6 to 9 months as far as people having made that decision to delay their computer purchases.
Well, there are many different versions of Vista that are available, and without really, I mean, that could take an hour unto itself, really kind of describing the differences. The Windows Supersite, for example, breaks it down really nicely. But can you give us in general terms, you know, for example, let's say I have XP Home or I have XP Professional, what versions of Vista might, you know, kind of bridge between those two versions of older legacy operating systems?
Sure. It's actually, I mean, you're right. Windows Supersite has a very in-depth breakdown of feature by feature of the differences. I'll summarize them more generally. There's essentially five basic versions of Vista. Six if you include Windows Starter Edition, which is not available in the United States, but is available in some locales internationally. So I'm not going to describe that. Of those five, four of them are commercially available. So two of them are for home users. You have Home Basic and Home Premium. You then have Business Edition and Enterprise Edition. Now, Enterprise Edition is not available publicly. You have to be an Enterprise customer, and it's based on volume licensing. So that's kind of the corporate version. And then the fifth version is Windows Ultimate. So what are the differences? Home Basic and Home Premium essentially contain all of the features of Windows that would be interesting to, or that we find the most fitting to the home environment or to the personal usage environment. So this is going to include all of your media capabilities, games, media center, media player, movie maker, a number of those sorts of applications, parental controls. It's not going to include some of the advanced networking features like domain join, mostly networking. Those sorts of features are not included in the home versions. The business version includes more of the networking and corporate policy type administrative tools, and they don't include the media aspect. So you're not going to have Media Center, you're not going to have the games, you're not going to have the media player and some of the other media functionality. Now, Ultimate then combines all of those. So Ultimate is the complete superset of everything. It includes Media Center, it includes media, all the other media functionality, it includes parental controls, it includes domain join. So it has the most comprehensive and complete set of features for Windows. I mentioned that there's two home versions, Home Basic and Home Premium. Home Basic is limited in that it only allows a certain number of applications to be running at a given time, as well as it gives you a limited visual experience. You can't run the Aero Glass. There's a number of other kind of visual elements that have been disabled in that version for someone who maybe has older hardware that they aren't going to take advantage of some of the new graphics capabilities, that just want to be able to upgrade their older computer. So you mentioned you had there was XP Home and XP Professional. XP Home is really the nearest corollary is Home Premium for Vista. And Professional is a strange hybrid, but is really closest to the Business Edition, and Ultimate then kind of combines the best of both of those.
Okay, great. That, I think, kind of summarizes it pretty well. And again, if people want a lot more details, there's stuff on Microsoft's website as well as the Windows Super site. It's there's so much out there about all of this that it's sort of overwhelming. I spent a couple hours alone last night just trying to get my hands around the different versions, so... All right. Well, thank you, Dan. And Daryl?
Okay. Well, I'd like to first address a question, a good question from Steve, if I might.
Sure.
He says, I currently program on Windows using unmanaged tools. Do I have to port all my applications to the .NET framework in order for them to run on Vista?
Great question.
Yeah, a really good question, and I'm not the most technical person to be asking that question, but I can say that we still do support unmanaged applications. Clearly, there's benefits to running managed code. I don't want to be quoted too technically about the idiosyncrasies of that, but both. Managed and unmanaged code are still supported. To what capacity, I'm not a good person to speak to, but I'm assuming that my we'll make sure to get my contact information out here later in the show, and if people do have some technical questions like that, I can try to follow up on those.
I think the main thing here is to point Steve to MSDN, which has been recently updated for Vista. And any Windows API changes or anything like that might affect that, that would be the resource that that you would want to utilize.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in what areas has Vista improved accessibility, covering the ease of access center and perhaps also features for low vision users?
Yeah, well, this alone I can do an hour presentation on, so I'm going to try to I'll try and highlight some of the things here about what I think are the key things that we've done with accessibility. The first thing is kind of an under-the-hood type of investment that we've made. Most people are familiar with our old API architecture, MSAA, that existed in Windows XP. And so we have made the investment in Windows Vista and introduced UI automation. This is a new API platform for developers to create, hopefully create the hooks so that accessibility tools like screen readers and magnifiers can utilize the elements of the screen, utilize the elements of an application to interact with. So UI automation is really the first thing. And again, not being the most technical person, I don't want to go down that road because I know there's a lot of discussion around UI automation in the marketplace right now. But more importantly, in the structure, you mentioned Ease of Access Center. I think the best point to make around accessibility in Vista is the investment in the research we did around the discoverability of our accessibility tools and how we've really taken a new approach to trying to we've taken a new approach to the way we label them and the way we expose them to users. So previously in Windows XP, our accessibility tools were spread out quite disparately amongst the operating system. Some of them were in the control panel, and some of them existed in other areas. And what we found was not only were they hard to find because they were in a number of places, but that a lot more people could actually find benefit in those tools than were allowing themselves the opportunity to use. So, for example, our research showed of working-age adults aged 18 to 64, that 57% of the population could find some use of an accessibility aid. That's a screen reader, a magnifier, high contrast, larger cursor sizes, maybe audio feedback for someone who's having some low vision, maybe more color or visual feedback on the screen for someone who is having hearing loss. And what we found is that of those people, the 57% of the working age adults that could find use in them, of those aids, didn't identify themselves as having a disability. And so when they came to the control panel and it said accessibility options and there was a picture of a wheelchair, they felt disenfranchised. They said that I don't relate to that. I don't know how that's going to help me. I'm not disabled, so I'm not going to even look there to see if there's a solution to my problem. So Ease of Access Center was our way of bringing all of the elements of accessibility into one place and trying to rebrand it in a way that this isn't just about meeting the needs of disabled people, although that is a very, very big market that we are, a big need that we have to fill, but it's about giving people of all abilities the chance to find the tools that they need to make the computer easier to use.
All right. Now, you're probably going down our list, and we're moving things around a little bit only because of time, and we also want to get the lines opened as well, Dan.
That's fine.
So I'm going to combine kind of three things here, and the first thing is, will applications which currently support MSAA still be supported? And then we'll go ahead and ask this in a three-tier because they're sort of all three. Pretty short. I think you'll be able to handle these pretty quickly. The other question is, what enhancements? There's been lots of rumors out there about what you've done to Narrator.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had, this is probably the number one question we've had that come in, and that is there truly now a talking installer for both new installations as well as upgrade installs?
All right, let's try and take these in order. MSAA is still supported in Vista. Matter of fact, most applications that are running on Vista, including Office 2007, most of the other ISV-type applications like that, still support MSAA. The question's a bit strange in the sense that, well, applications that utilize MSAA still be compatible with Vista? It's kind of a yes or no, a yes and no answer. MSAA is still supported. There may be other things that prevent those applications that worked on XP from being able to be installed directly on Vista, which is why you have a lot of companies right now working to actually create Vista-specific versions of their programs. Those changes are necessary, not necessarily because of not supporting MSAA, because we do, but because there have been other changes to Vista and the operating system, specifically around security, that have necessitated the need for those changes. So I hope that makes sense.
Sure.
Narrator. The biggest thing with Narrator that I can point out, not many changes have taken place. There are some, of course, places where we have made improvements, but the most significant improvement is the support for SAPI 5 and our new voice, Anna, that now comes installed by default, which is a SAPI 5 compliant voice. There's still limitations to Narrator, and it's not a full functioning screen reader in the sense that maybe JAWS and WindowEyes are. Doug might be able to point out later when he's on from GW Micro, might be able to point out better some of the distinctions between their product and what Narrator provides. Narrator still, as with XP, is designed to provide basic support for access to windows and menus and your control panel functions.
Okay. And then the question about the installation, the talking installer.
I should really have a firm answer on this, and unfortunately the three people that I ran this by again today, I got differing answers on. I've heard that we have a voicing installer. I personally haven't seen it used, so I personally didn't think that it was being supported, but someone else I talked to today said that it was. So I'm at this point neither going to confirm nor deny the existence of a voicing installer.
Okay, well, maybe what we can do is if you can get back to us on that would be great, and then I can let people know on a future edition of Main Menu Live. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, and I can give you guys some information to put up on your blog as well.
Okay, great. One of the people who are listening, Chris, has asked, and I've actually seen quite a bit of press on this lately, about is it required to have Windows XP or a competitive product, like Windows 98, Windows 98 Second Edition, something like that, already on a hard drive before you can actually install the upgrade edition of Windows Vista. Do you know about that, Dan?
Actually, my understanding is all you need to have, the only difference between an upgrade version and a full version of Windows Vista is the fact that a full version comes with a license key that you would then use to basically unlock the features of Vista. And that in an upgrade version, you would just use the product key from your previous version. So I do know that you can do a clean install of Vista from an upgrade by using the old product key.
Interesting. Okay. Because sites like CNET, and I'm not trying to challenge you here at all, because it's sort of confusing, and I think that's why Chris is asking the question, is that sites like CNET and other places like that are saying that you actually physically have to have XP, for example, on the hard drive and installed. You can't simply just put in the, an older upgrade, you could put in the XP CD and it would read the disk.
Well, let me make a distinction there. There's, yes, that may actually in fact be true, but there's, I guess, two ways of looking at upgrade. Is upgrade
sure.
a transferring of your, there's an upgrade path where you can say upgrade my computer and it's going to retain all your files and documents that you had on your previous XP installation, and it's merely going to upgrade the system components and retain all of that other data.
Okay.
Right? So that's sort of an upgrade. Then there's the clean install where it actually removes everything from your previous installation. So it's possible that we're both correct in the sense that you have to have some operating system on your computer in order to put in the Vista CD in order to install, for it to start the installer. And therefore, you have to have a version of XP or 98 or whatever the various upgrade paths are from previous versions in order to begin that process. Now, does that mean that you have to do a traditional upgrade, which is by migrating your files over during the installation process? No, you don't have to do that. You can have it clean your computer.
Great. Well, thank you, Dan. Let's go ahead and open up the phone lines. The number tonight is 866-400-JEFF, 866-400-5333. If you want to call in and ask Dan any questions, now is the time to do so. And, Daryl, why don't we, this next question, it's number 11, Daryl, on the list. This question actually came in from the Top Tech Tidbits guy. Everyone knows who he is. Dean Martin, Dean, and so he wanted to know something about a new feature inside of Windows Explorer.
Absolutely. Actually, what Dean wants to know is, what is the new breadcrumb feature of Windows Explorer? Is it accessible? Is it worth using? And how about the accessibility of the new speech recognition features? So that's kind of a double question there.
Yeah, there's a couple of things. So what I'll let's talk about the breadcrumbing thing first, and I'm going to actually turn on Narrator here real quick because I have actually not tried breadcrumbs with Narrator. And just see, make sure how this works, if I can tab through this, and whether it's accessible from other tools.
Dan, while you're doing that, we do have a caller, and I'll ask the caller to hold on just a minute while you answer this question, and we'll bring the caller right on, okay?
Sure. So breadcrumbing, I'll do an overview of what breadcrumbing is. So traditionally in Windows XP, you would see you're in your My Documents folder, and you have C:\, program files, all documents, all users, you know, documents folder. And it was a series of slashes and kind of an old list of folders in their order. And so with Vista, the way this works is that each folder is broken out as a breadcrumb. So typically in XP you had to back up, you would back up one space or move up a directory, kind of like the old DOS commands where you'd say move back one directory, move back one directory. With the breadcrumbs, you can actually go back to any one of those previous folders and bring a drop down of all of the items that reside in that. So for example, if I'm looking at here I have a breadcrumb series open. It says all settings, Daniel Hubble, documents, Bluetooth, inbox. And if I want to go back to the documents folder and I wanted to move out of the Bluetooth folder, I could say, well, documents. I'm going to click on documents and it shows me all of the folders that reside under documents. So no longer do I have to rely on backing through those cryptic folder levels. It actually tells me what all the peers are and all the children of a particular folder is in that breadcrumb.
Neat. Now, Dan, before we move on to the next part of this, let's go ahead and bring our caller in and get their question, and that way we can get another caller in on hold while you're answering the next question. Hello, caller, and
sure.
Welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hello there, Jeff. This is Monty from California.
Hello, Monty.
I just wanted to ask, Dan, it is true that whatever version of Vista you purchase, let's say you purchase Home Basic, you do get it in DVD form, and you can then later purchase an upgrade that merely requires you to purchase the proper license key for the upgrade you want, right? So in other words, it's all on one DVD, unlike, you know, it's all the editions are on one disc.
That's correct. The way that it works, and I don't know, there are specific upgrade paths. For example, I think you can upgrade from Home Premium to Ultimate, but you can't move from Ultimate to Home Premium. So there's various ways that you can migrate. But you are correct in that the CD that you get if you buy a copy of Home Basic, That DVD is exactly the same as the DVD you would get if you bought Home Premium or Ultimate Edition. The only difference is the product key that comes with it. And that product key is like a true key. It unlocks the features that that version, that is relevant to that version. So we've created really this global imprint of Windows, and based on which key you use to unlock Windows, it will activate the particular features related to that version.
That'll make it nice, I think, for all of us to just have one CD and just have the proper key. I appreciate that, and you guys have a good evening.
All right,
good show there, Jeff.
Well, thank you, sir. Thanks. All right. We'll talk to you
Bye.
Later. Uh-huh. 866.
Go ahead, Dan.
Oh, I was just going to add one thing to that.
Sure, go right ahead.
In an IT environment, one of the things that has been great about this is for folks that that maintain IT environments and maybe create images of their computers for, say, a lab environment or maybe possibly a school or an organization, you can create a single image, and depending on which version you want to use, you can actually associate various license keys with that, and it will unlock the features. So you can create these rather than having 32 separate images as you've previously had to do with, say, a tool like Norton Ghost. Now with some new tools actually built in with Vista, and because we have a single code base, you can create, say, two images and be able to run your entire IT infrastructure off of those two just based on which product keys and manifests you unlock it with.
Okay, great. And before we get to the speech recognition, let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. Hello, caller. Welcome to Main Menu Live. You're speaking with Jeff and Dan Hubble and Daryl.
Hello, my name is Thomas Gatesy, and hi, Dan, and hi, Jeff. And I just wanted to ask a few questions. I've been actually reviewing Windows Vista for 1.5 years,
mm-hmm.
you know, just looking at it and testing it with my different computer systems that I have. And I basically have three questions. One is concerning UAC, which is the new user account control protection that Microsoft implemented, and how this is going to work with screen readers, or if we can make it work with screen readers, since I heard that they use different kind of display settings for that. Secondly, WDDM, which is the Windows display driver model, and I believe they're working on it, but do you have any idea when we can expect to see a version of a screen reader that is fully compatible with WDDM and its features? And third is BitLocker, which is a new hard drive encryption tool that's in Windows Vista. And to use a Trusted Password module, which is a TPM chip that's built inside most computers that come out today, how would we blind people be able to enter the password in if it starts at the BIOS?
Okay.
And
Tom, I'm going to have you go ahead and listen on the air, okay, so we can free up the line for the next caller.
That's fine.
Okay, great. And we'll have Dan answer your questions now.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Dan. there was quite a bit there, and so I'll let you go ahead and take whichever though you know how you want to handle those.
Sure, I'm taking notes, so I have a horrible memory. So the first one I'll take is the BitLocker question. I'm going to take that one first because I don't have an answer. I'm not familiar enough with BitLocker and how it works to answer that. But it's a great question in understanding how we can access that, considering that there are some encryption tools that are kind of at the BIOS level. So something I think that might be a great follow-up, and maybe I can pass on some information to you guys in the coming weeks as I will do some research on that for you.
Okay, thank you.
The next two, I can actually take these somewhat together. The first one is UAC, the user account control. There's been a lot of talk about these dialogues that come up when, even if you are a user that is designated as an administrator, anytime a task occurs, let's say installing a program or opening specific control panel applications, a dialog comes up that says, we need your authorization as an administrator to perform this task. We're not going to do it automatically. And this is, again, part of the security of preventing scripts or other applications from doing things to your computer without your knowledge. So I can tell you that I have seen and I have working screen readers that will read UAC controls. In fact, Mike Calvo from Freedom Box is going to be on here in the next hour, and he can talk to you about what they've done with both UAC and WDDM. There's another company I know that also has a screen reader that works with glass or WDDM drivers running. So people are doing it. It's out there. There are screen readers that are available that address both of those problems, and we've been working very well in partnership with all of the screen reader manufacturers in addressing any concerns or trouble that they've had in implementing their tools to work with both both UAC and our new video drivers.
That's great. Thank you, Dan. Daryl, do you have any questions that have come in through Messenger? Okay, I guess not.
We'll actually, I don't have any. I don't have any new ones right now.
Okay, so, great. We do have another caller. Let's bring the caller in. Hello, caller. Welcome to Main Menu Live, and you're speaking to Daryl, Jeff, and Daniel Hubble from Microsoft.
Good evening, Jeff. This is Randy. I'm calling to ask a couple of questions. The first question is if you could just elaborate a little bit on the cooperation that you feel like you're getting from the major screen reader players. I'm curious from your perspective if any of them have announced publicly about 64-bit support for Avista. And the second question has to do with the speech recognition features. Could you talk a little bit about how those have changed from, say, Windows XP to Vista, and how other accessibility aids might work with that feature?
Okay, and we'll take that. If you can listen on the air, that would be great, Randy.
Thank you.
Uh-huh, sure. All right, Dan,
go right ahead. We're actually getting back to the speech question.
Yeah, we are getting back to that. So let me try and hit the other two first, and then I'll kind of go into a little talk about speech recognition. First of all, we've had tremendous collaborative and cooperative development going on with, I would say, easily 40 to 50 AT manufacturers, including all the major screen reader companies, for at least the last year and a half, if not closer to 2 years. I don't know of any of them that have announced 64-bit support. It just hasn't been something that's been a priority for us to track. So there may be somebody. You could probably talk to the next two gentlemen that will be on later, but I'm not aware of any 64-bit support currently. But we have had a fantastic cooperative relationship, which is a bit different than what we had with Windows XP, and so I think a lot of us are very excited to see the fact that we have so many products available at or right here near the launch of Vista today, as that was not the case for Windows XP. And what we did, the beginning of this was about a year and a half ago. We brought in a number of companies, a number of vendors that produce assistive technology products, and we actually brought them here on campus, and we laid out our plans. We said, here's what we're doing for Vista. Here are the technology changes that are taking place. Now, you know, what are you working on? What are the problems that you're having? What are the needs that you have? And they sat down together in rooms with our developers and collaboratively came up and troubleshooted problems, and collaboratively came up with, you know, what are the APIs that need to exist? What are the things that need to happen in order for this to be, you know, a great operating system from an accessibility point of view? So we took that feedback and continued our relationship with them with monthly conference calls, emails. We provide technical support for all the vendors that belong to our technology vendor program, and really tried to create a channel for third-party AT companies including all the screen readers, to come to us and say, hey, these are the resources that we need in order to make our product successful. And so I think we've been, the proof is in the fact that I looked today for the launch. If you go to Microsoft.com/enable, and if you do a search on assistive technology products, and if you click the compatible with Vista button, there are currently 71 products listed there that our vendors have updated as being compatible with Vista. So I think that's a tremendous story for not only us to tell, but for our vendors to say, hey, they've found a value in addressing the market for the new operating system and making sure that their users have the tools that they need to be successful.
Well, that's great. Okay, so what about the new speech recognition feature?
Speech recognition, this is by far my favorite, certainly it's my favorite new feature to demo, and it's probably the most significant change from an accessibility point of view outside of the platform investments that we made with UI automation. Speech recognition was designed somewhat based on what existed in the Office products for Windows XP. And what we decided to do, the speech team went out and said, okay, speech recognition, in order for it to work, really needs to resonate with users. And so they did a tremendous amount of research and focus groups on users in how they wanted to be able to interact with speech, how they wanted to use speech. And the biggest thing that we have integrated was the fact that you can use speech in Windows Vista to command and control your computer. That's the menus. That's browsing through all of your folders. It's walking through your media files. But we also paired that with dictation, and it's all a part of a single mode. So you can go from dictation to command and control seamlessly without having to change modes, without having to move between services. It's all integrated. And speech recognition, I just love it because it's so sexy to stand in front of a room and step back from the keyboard, and I just think of that scene in Star Trek when Star Trek 4, Scotty picks
yes,
up
right.
the mouse.
Hello, computer. Yeah.
Hello, computer. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like that. And I can sit back, and we actually had a day here, a challenge day, where we said, okay, everybody, disconnect your keyboards and your mice and use speech recognition to do your job today. And, you know, it takes a little getting used to because obviously part of the reason why you work fast with a keyboard and a mouse is because you're used to it and you're comfortable with it. But once you have actually learned the commands, it is remarkably faster, especially for typing. I'm not a touch typist. I don't type very fast. So for me, I can actually dictate a document a lot faster than I can type it.
How comparable is it to something like, you know, drag and dictate?
Well, in what
like
way?
Like a mainstream product. I mean, do you think it's, you know, as good, or do you think it's, you know, where do you think it lies in that space?
Well, here's where I think we have an advantage, and I think this is the best speech product on the market for a general consumer. Out of the box, you can install, speech recognition is already installed, but you can activate speech recognition. You can take the tutorial, if you want to learn the commands, and it learns from your tutorial as you're taking the tutorial. But in my case, I already know the commands. I can take a clean install of Vista, turn on speech recognition with no training, without going through the tutorial, and have 90 to 95% accuracy.
Wow.
No training, out of the box. Hmm. And that's unheard of. It's nothing like that on the market.
Well,
and
interesting.
When you do need to train it, and when you do have to make corrections, the interface that we have created is very unique and very intuitive, and every demo that I've given receives wows from the audience.
There's that wow word again.
Users. There's that wow word again, exactly. You'll be seeing a lot of that in the next few weeks.
Yeah, wow. All right, good.
And it really is the one feature that when I talk about it, I say, no, this is wow. This is really the stuff that is that wows are made out of.
right.
And an important note for this, by the way, we were talking about the different versions or SKUs of Vista.
Mm-hmm.
Speech recognition is included in all of them.
Well, that's
so
great.
So there's no difference between Home Basic and Ultimate in that regard.
Well, I know this is going to come up, and so I'll just, you know, ask it. Do you know if there's any API hooks for this so that screen readers can actually hook in and make it work with a screen reader?
This is a there's a couple of common questions come up, and that's one of them. Currently, there are no hooks for speech integration with things like screen readers, and
okay.
It's something that we know we need to work on, and it just wasn't something that was in the scope of
right.
Getting out for this release. As well as the second question that I always get to this is the ability to script it or to create kind of macro tasks.
Yeah.
Again, not something that was really in the scope of this, but definitely a work item that we're looking at for the next version, as it's probably the most common question that I get around speech.
Okay. We have another caller, and then we have a question from Daryl from Carl. So let's take our caller first. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live. You're speaking with Daryl, Jeff, and Dan Hubble from Microsoft.
Okay, my question is simple. The hardware-software compatibility between XP and Vista. I run a Dell computer, but when I installed XP, I had a whole lot of issues where I had to rely on Dell in order to give me the drivers. Will I have the same problem when I upgrade to the Vista system?
Okay, we'll take that off the air, and if you could listen live, that would be great.
All right, thank you.
Uh-huh, thank you. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, that's actually a really excellent call, and one of the things that I like about the system we have set up for Vista, first, the driver support in Vista is significantly better than it was with Windows XP. Even our default drivers that we ship for just generic plug-and-play devices that maybe aren't specific to a device are very good. On top of that, the first thing that it's going to do when you're going through the setup is if you have Internet access, it will go to Windows Update, and we have coordinated with most hardware manufacturers that they can actually release updates to their drivers via Windows Update. So no longer are you chasing off to the Dell website or the Toshiba website or HP, whoever your manufacturer is. You don't have to chase down each of those sites to figure out where the updater drivers are. Whether or not the manufacturers choose to use that method or not is up to them. But I know on my computer, every time I reinstall Vista, I go to Windows Update, and there's probably five or six driver updates from the manufacturer for my video card and for my mouse and for my pointing device to update them to the most recent version of that device. So hopefully we've created a system where not only is our inbox driver support better, but this process by which you get updated drivers is easier.
Excellent. Great. Okay. Daryl, we had a question from Carl.
Right. Carl would kind of like to go full circle just a tiny bit. He asked he asked two somewhat related questions. If I'm not interested in the TV tuning and high-definition video support, are there any real significant differences between the Home Basic and Home Premium Edition? And secondly, what is the difference between the DVD and the downloadable versions?
Oh, really great questions. Okay, thank you, Daryl. Go ahead, Dan.
Wow, and I don't know as if I have answers to either of those. I'm not well-versed in all of the differences between Home Basic and Home Premium. The best thing I think to do is to go look at either something like Windows Super Site, where those guys have very comprehensive breakdowns, or just go to Microsoft.com/Windows, and they'll have a breakdown of what each of those versions include.
Now, what about the download, Dan? Do you know if you get an ISO image that you can burn to a DVD with that download, or is it a or how does that work? Do you know?
I honestly do not know.
Okay. Well, we'll try to find out.
Yeah, and I'll try and get some answers back to you guys, and you can maybe either on your next show relay some of these answers or put them up on your website somewhere.
Yeah, we'll do both. Okay. Hey, we have another the caller went away. Let me get rid of that. 866-400-JEFF, 866-400-5333.
Now, do you know what screen readers are currently available and shipping? I know we have the two guys that are here, and I think both of them are ready. And have you had any experience using either one of those products, Dan?
Well, here's what I'll relay from ATIA, the conference just this last week. Of course, Mike Calvo is going to be on your show next, talking about his Key to Freedom and his Freedom Box network
and System Access
screen reader. System Access. So he has a working version. He has actually sent me a version of that that I have indeed run in my office and I've played with, and it works fantastic. The folks from GW Micro and WindowEyes, I know I've done demos with their products working on Windows Vista as well as Office 2007. So I believe they have a public beta that's available that they're going to be talking about this evening. And then at ATIA last week, I know both Dolphin had a version of HAL that they were running on Vista, and they were at least showing it. I don't know whether or not it's available or not.
Yeah, we have an update from them, and we'll be actually playing that a little bit later.
So you have that update, and then as well, Freedom Scientific had a version of JAWS that they were running on Vista. However, I don't know what the availability date of that is. I know that it's, other than being in their developer network, I don't think it's publicly available at this point.
Right. Okay. Well, I do know that they're going to be having a Freedom Scientific podcast available in the near future. So people want to be checking that website, freedomscientific.com, for more details. And we have another caller. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live. You're speaking with Dan Hubbell from Microsoft.
Hi, Jeff. This is Rick. I have a question for you, and I have a question for Dan.
Ah, okay.
My question for Dan first is, will Narrator function with Internet Explorer on Vista?
Okay. Go ahead, Dan.
It works the same as it would have in previous versions. So you're going to have access to your menus and windows, but it's not going to read the content pane. It's not a full-functioning screen reader like the other products. So, again, you'll have basic access to your menus, but you're not going to have the ability to read through your content pane in Internet Explorer.
Okay. And Mike, and your question for me, Rick.
Okay. I see WindowEyes has a beta for Vista.
That's right.
Any information?
And Doug will be here in about an hour.
Is there any information about when FS may have something for us for Vista?
I have no more information than what we've already just stated, which is that Freedom will be putting up a podcast on their website, and you want to go there and get the latest information. And we're not sure as to when that will appear, but it said that it will be soon.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Rick, for calling in. 866-400-5333. 866-400-JEFF. Do you have about 5 or 10 more minutes for us, Dan?
Sure.
Okay. I know we're probably going to get a couple more calls, and if we don't, then that's fine, too. We'll go ahead and let you go. But I, as popular as things have been tonight, I'm sure we will. 866-400-JEFF, 866-400-5333. Daryl, do we have any more comments from Messenger?
The Messenger side of the house is
pretty
quiet.
Okay. All right. Great. Now, Dan, where can people find out things like keyboard guides and other documentation in reference to accessibility? And there goes the hold that thought. Let's go ahead and bring our caller in. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hi. Yes. I've got a question about the Windows Vista.
You need to turn down your computer there.
All right. Just 1 second.
Okay. We'll give you a second there and wait for you to. We'll turn you down there and we'll bring you back here in just a minute. Okay. All right. Go right ahead.
Okay. I've got a question about Windows Vista's voice quality. The voice Microsoft sound, like, are there going to be like any other, like, when you use Narrator, do you just have Microsoft sound? Are they going to give you like a couple voices to choose from?
Oh, that's a great question.
Or is that going to...
Okay.
I think Dan already knows the answer to that. We'll go ahead and let him answer, and we'll let you listen on the air, okay?
All righty.
Okay, great. Thanks for calling in.
Hey.
Go ahead, Dan. I think we already know the answer to that one.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. There's a number of free voices that you can download off the Microsoft website from previous versions, all SAPI 4 voices. The only voice that we include with Vista is Anna, which is our new SAPI 5 voice. So the quality is much better than the ones that we had shipping with Windows XP, but it is the only choice that we have, unless you want to go and download any of
the other SAPI 5 stuff. Okay, we have another caller. Hello, caller. Welcome to Main Menu Live.
Yes, this is Richard from Austin, Texas.
Hello, Richard.
I have a question that maybe is more technical than maybe you want to handle, but is the process for working with the registry still the same as it is under XP?
As far as
regedit to do work in the registry.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any changes to the way the registry's been architected.
Okay, does that answer your question, Richard?
Yes.
Okay, great. 866-400 Jeff, 866-400-5333. All right. And so let's go ahead and answer this question about more accessibility information and things like that. Do you know of any resources we might be able to
yeah,
to get
the,
our hands
the
on?
Best place to go is Microsoft.com/enable. And we've actually, just as of last week, updated a number of guides, including accessibility guides for Windows Vista, Office 2007, Internet Explorer 7. There's some feedback and some requests we've received about maybe having some guides available for how to use keyboard shortcuts and those sorts of things. So we're constantly looking at what new content we can add up there and how we can expand our content offering up there. So certainly we're open for suggestions or need in that regard. But Microsoft.com/enable. Is the best place to go.
Okay, great. We have another caller. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hi, Jeff. This is Randy again. Just a quickie. I wanted to let you know that you can download and burn an ISO image of Vista.
Okay, great. All right.
You.
Thanks, Randy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. See, all of our listeners know. They know everything.
Excellent.
Okay, well, do you want to give some contact? Oh, hold on. Let's go ahead and take this caller right away. And we're going to take two or three more calls, and then we're going to let Dan go and so we can get our next guest on. Hello, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Jeff, hi, this is Anita from Atlanta. Just a question for Dan. I'm wondering if with the debut of Windows Vista, will this mean that we'll soon also have some upgrades for Windows Mobile, for mobile devices?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I do not know what the release schedule is. I know Windows Mobile 5 just released last year.
Windows Mobile 6 released just recently.
I'm sorry, did I? Yeah.
Yeah, Windows Mobile 6, I think, just came out, didn't it?
It did. And my head is still crazy. My phone is Windows Mobile 5, so it's late for me.
No, that's not a problem.
But you're correct. There was a version that just came out, and so I don't know what the release schedule is for newer versions of that. The separate teams run those two products, and they are run on different code bases. So,
but they certainly are compatible with each other then.
Well, I mean, they're compatible to some degree, but again, they're not. It's not like the Windows Mobile that's running on your phone, isn't the same full featured version that's running on your desktop.
Right.
I know that ActiveSync will not work anymore in Windows Vista.
That was my question too.
Yeah, the ActiveSync will not work in Windows Vista, but the new Windows Mobile Center will. And my understanding is that, and Dan, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe that it is backward compatible with 2003 devices.
Yeah, matter of fact, I've used the Mobile Sync Center in Vista, and it works quite well. I actually like it a lot better than I like ActiveSync. So,
but
I'm sorry.
And it does go back to 2003 then.
I do believe so.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Yeah. Okay. right, well, thanks for calling.
Congratulations on the new show.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, Daryl, before we take our next caller, because I'm sure it will come in relatively quickly here, it looks like we have a question from Edwin.
Yes, Edwin would like to know if it is possible to use voices with narrator other than those provided with the operating system.
Oh, so, great question.
So could you use any other SAPI 5 speech with that?
Yes. Narrator supports any SAPI-compliant voice, so if you have other voices, you can plug those in with no problem.
Okay.
And we have a question from Caroline also.
Okay, go right ahead, Daryl.
Okay, Caroline would like to know about upgrade pricing for the various versions of Vista from, say, XP Home and XP Pro.
The best way, because I don't have all these memorized, would be to just go to Microsoft.com/Windows Vista, and they have a list of suggested retail pricing there.
Yeah, also, you know, your retail channel will be a really good resource for you there, too, because traditionally you'll get it a lot cheaper from, you know, retail stores.
Yeah, they've had all sorts of deals. I know Amazon was running specials and Best Buy and a number of places. So.
Exactly. We're going to take this call and then one more, and then we're going to let Dan go so that we can get Mike and Matt on next here on Main Menu Live. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Oh, yeah, good evening, guys. It's also Dan here from Ontario, Canada.
Hello there.
And you talk about Microsoft working closely with manufacturers of screen readers, but what about companies that manufacture magnification products?
Actually, there's a great one there in Canada, Medentech, that we've worked very closely with for their magnification product, as well as companies like AI Squared and their magnification products. We have more than 150 companies as a part of our vendor program, and they span hardware, software, magnification, cognitive, blindness, low vision, any area that you can think of. We have companies that we've been working with in that area. We focus a lot on the screen readers because they seem to be the most important, or at least the ones that are the most necessary to provide access for folks. Certainly we have worked very closely with a number of magnification companies, including the two that I mentioned, which I should mention both have versions. If they're not available, they're certainly in beta for Vista.
Okay. Now, because a couple of friends of mine were running the AI Squared product, particularly one. She's got, I believe it's version 8.13 on a Toshiba laptop.
Okay.
Which she had got recently, and I don't know whether she's thinking about upgrading to Vista or not, but
I don't know when AI Squared has a release date for Zoom Text, but I have a copy of Zoom Text for Vista running on my computer here that I've been evaluating for them, and it's been running really well. So you might want to contact them and find out when they're final release date that is anticipated.
We'll try to get them on Main Menu Live as well, so you can call and ask them questions.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
Okay. All right. Thank you for calling in.
Okay, Jeff. Take care, and good show.
Thank you. We're going to take one more caller, and then we're going to let Dan go. I know you probably haven't even had dinner yet, have you?
I have not. Matter of fact, my wife just IM'd me and said, when are you leaving? I've got food ready.
Okay. Well, it looks like we'll wait here in 10 or 15 seconds here and see. We want to really, really thank you very, very much for joining us here on Main Menu Live, Dan, and it's been a pleasure. We'll have to have you back when things aren't so hectic for you, and you know, right around a launch of Vista and all, it's probably pretty darn hectic for you.
Oh, yeah, it's hectic, but you know what? I love doing this, and I love talking with everybody, and I apologize if I didn't have all the answers, but
that's
we'll make
okay.
sure to get those out and make sure that you guys get updated with the information you need.
Okay, great.
Excellent. Thank you for coming on the show, Dan.
Thank you.
Hey, I appreciate the invite.
Yeah, all right. Okay, well, we'll talk to you later, and we'll email you, and we'll get those the questions, your feedback, and we'll put them up on the blog, and we'll also discuss them. Oh, let's go ahead and take this one last call real fast, and then we'll call it a night for Dan. Hello, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hey, Jeff. This is Jody Peterson.
Jody, how are you?
Hey, I got a real quick question.
Okay.
My question is, with Windows Vista, the versions with the Media Center components, are the Media Center menus going to be accessible like the rest of the OS are? Are they going to be, in some other mechanism that won't work?
Okay, that's a really great question, and we'll let Dan answer that. And if you can listen on the air, that would be great, Jody.
Sounds great. Thanks,
okay,
Jeff.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, we're going to close the phone lines now for, in fact, I'm going to take the, let me do that. I'm going to take that phone physically off the hook. Sorry about the dial tone there. Good old Ma Bell, you know how it is.
Yeah.
Go right ahead.
So, great question. And I know that... there are companies, this is actually probably a great question from Mike Calvo, who's coming on next, because I know he's been interested in looking at Media Center stuff. The Media Center is, they do have an implementation of MSAA, I believe. I don't know how thorough that is. I know that there have been some issues around being able to navigate some of the menus. I'm not a Media Center expert,
okay.
But I do know that just like any other application, they support MSAA, but to what extent that's actually available or is utilized is going to depend on the AT products.
Okay.
If that makes any sense.
Sure, and I think that that Mike will be able to address this, because I'm sort of aware of some stuff that he's doing. That he'll be able to address this issue momentarily. So,
excellent.
All right. Well, again, thank you very, very, very much, Dan. And we've really enjoyed having you here tonight on Main Menu Live. And don't be a stranger.
It was a pleasure, and I look forward to doing it again.
All right. Thanks again. Now,
thanks, guys.
Thanks. Bye bye. Now we're going to Daryl. Are you there? Daryl. Okay. Let's see here. I'm going to start our Access Watch presentation now. This lasts for about 3 minutes, so sit back, enjoy listening to that. And we're going to work now on getting on our next guest, which is Matt Campbell and Mike Calvo from Saratech Corporation.
January 7th, 2005, I did a review for Access Watch on an online music subscription program called Rhapsody. At that time, the program was at version 2.something. Today, we're at version 4.0. When I did the review, I gave the program a 2 rating. Today, I think that it probably deserves at least a 3-star rating, and maybe even a little higher. One of the things that has improved about Rhapsody is that today, you can actually play songs using keyboard shortcuts, such as Control P to play and pause, Control S to stop, F10 and 11 to decrease and increase the volume.
Yeah, I know.
But I am a little ahead of myself, so let me back up. One of the things that makes Rhapsody so appealing is that there are a large number of tracks to choose from, and they are artists that we're all mostly familiar with. One of the things that it's possible to do with Rhapsody is to listen online to albums. So you can choose an artist, choose an album, and listen to your heart's content. You can listen for 25 songs a month for free, or you can subscribe for $9.95 for unlimited use. One of the nice things about the software that comes with Rhapsody is that it does allow more control over the player. If you don't want to mess with the player, however, or any software at all, you can actually access Rhapsody from the web at www.rhapsody.com. and you can just use a regular Internet Explorer interface to search and play tracks. You are unable, as far as I can tell, to stop, pause, increase or decrease the volume of a track from within the player. I find that I just have to Alt-F4 out of the window where the player is to stop the track playing. Even from within the software itself, searching is pretty much like using a web page. One of the things that you will need to do, and I find that this works for me better with Windows Eye 6.0 than with JAWS, is to use the mouse movement command some. You may need to click to bring focus into an area, or you may need to access menu controls, such as your account settings, with the mouse movement keys. The Alt key and arrow keys do not seem to work in that regard. Another thing that does not work well at all is the library. And this is where the program really falls, because even though you can import tracks and you can purchase tracks successfully with speech, once it's to your library, it's a little tough to gain access to it. Some tracks are actually in Windows Media format, and those you can browse to on your hard drive and find them and actually burn them using any program that you use to burn CDs. But some are in the protected Real Audio format, which is RAX, and I have not found a way to successfully burn those tracks. I have found the burn process in Rhapsody to be totally inaccessible at this time. So for just simply listening to tracks and enjoying albums, I find Rhapsody to be quite useful. To actually purchase and manipulate tracks, we have a long way to go. If you're interested, check it out at www.rhapsody.com and come visit us at AccessWatch, www.accesswatch.info. Have a great week.
We want to sincerely thank Jamie for coming on this week on To Main Menu Live. He'll be appearing with us weekly here on Main Menu, giving us an AccessWatch review. Now on Main Menu Live, it's my pleasure to bring to you Matt Campbell and Mike Calvo, along with Daryl, who all three of you should be there. We're utilizing Skype tonight to bring all of us together. Hello, gentlemen.
You're all here.
Good. Good evening.
Very good.
Good evening.
Hello. Hello, Matt. Hello, Mike. And welcome, Saratech. So, Let's go ahead and get started. And the first thing that I wanted to ask you, and then I'm going to let Daryl kind of take it from here, was this question about this seems to be a long-standing question as to, you know, what is system access? You know, because we've seen quite a bit of press today about you know, some things going on in Vista, and I wanted, Mike, to give you the opportunity to kind of clarify for everyone, you know, where system access stands in the marketplace, and then we're going to dive right into Vista.
Okay. About 15 years ago, there was an invention in the automobile sector called the SUV, right? And nobody knew what it was because it kind of was like a van, but at the same time you could take your kids to soccer games in it, but you could go out in the mud with it, and it had various different things. You could pull your boat with it. So after a while, people finally started seeing an SUV for what it was, which was a sports utility vehicle and a vehicle that was its own kind of creation and has its own market. That's kind of the way we look at system access. You know, I was really excited to hear about things that Dan was talking about earlier, things like voice recognition, which we at Saratech have been anxiously awaiting for. Those who have been, who have been with us for a number of years know that our first product, the Freedom Box one, version 1, include voice recognition and a lot of the features that are in Vista today when it comes to accessibility, things like touch screens and things of that nature and keyboard input and all that. And at one point, we made a decision that we were going to go ahead and put that down because we knew Vista was coming, and of course, it was a little bit delayed by a couple of years, right? And and we just kind of said, well, we will wait until Vista comes out, and we will come kind of full circle to what we call our FUI, or our flexible user interface technology. So while we do a lot of the same functions that screen readers do, we do quite a bit more. First thing we do is we do a lot of things automatically that screen readers don't do. Automatically without some configuration, which requires training, of course. So our time to learning our technology is much shorter. We're mobile, truly mobile, which there is not a screen reader on the market right now that can boast that. We are a true plug-and-play technology. So we're really next generation. We are currently available for Vista. We're not in beta. We're not a public beta. We are available. We've been available for about 3 weeks. And we're available not only on the desktop, but we're also available on keys and CDs. So you can walk up to any Vista machine, plug in, and have access right away. And we, you know, so I guess we really, I know it's kind of confusing to the folks listening to the program and folks even looking for adaptive technology, but screen readers have been around for, you know, 15, 20 years. And let me tell you, GW Micro, Freedom Scientific, Dolphin, all of them have done a great job, and they're wonderful folks, and they're pioneers in this industry. And I would be insulting them to say that we are a better technology. We're simply newer, and we probably, in many respects, have some more flexibility, and we just kind of are what we believe that the market is looking for. And that's apparent in certain things that are appearing actually in screen readers that we've set the trends in. So that's kind of my 2 or 3 minute review on, you know, or explanation of what we are and why we don't designate ourselves as a screen reader. Matt, would you like to add to that a little bit?
It's worth mentioning that the term screen reader has actually been a misnomer since the late 90s, as JAWS and WindowEyes and eventually HAL have all made departures in some areas from reading the screen. First of all, in the virtual cursor and similar things that are used to browse the web, as well as the use of object models and stuff like that in Microsoft Office. We go even further away from the traditional function of a screen reader, which is reading the screen.
Okay, yeah, and we don't use things like video chaining, and for example, when using the actual video mechanisms of Windows, we don't interfere at all. So things like AeroGlass that are native in Windows, they're not. Our technology doesn't interfere with them. And right now, AeroGlass is something new. But, you know, I can see the day where a software package will say, hey, you're not running AeroGlass, so you can't run this on this desktop. And if your screen reader cripples the ability of the video card or of the operating system to run AeroGlass, that's a serious problem. And that may even, you know, end up cutting down on somebody's productivity at work.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, Daryl, you want to pick it up from here?
Absolutely. Once again, thanks for coming on the show. I'm really, really excited about.
Just one second, Daryl. Can you get a little closer to your mic? You're a little bit low.
I actually turned it down on purpose.
Yeah, because there's a big difference between you and Mike. And Mike, if you can back away a little bit, because you're kind of distorting over here. So,
I'm just a big mouth. That's all.
I am too. So I appreciate the fact that I'm not the only member of the club, so to speak.
Okay, I'll let you take it from here, Daryl.
Okay, so okay,
I'm the president, buddy.
There you go. All right, all right. First of all, what is new in system access that was done specifically to support Vista, and talk about any new applications you're supporting and so on?
It was mostly a lot of application type support and under the hood type of things. I mean, we called it version 2.3 because it really wasn't worthy of a version 3.0. It's a natural upgrade. I mean, to us, we really didn't want to make that much fanfare out of going into Vista because, frankly, it's just kind of the way the market is going. It's a free upgrade for folks. We're not charging for it. It's just something that we had to do. As far as applications, we support IE7, which we announced back in September sometime.
October.
Oh, thank you. We supported, I sit corrected. We support, with Defender, Windows Defender, Windows One Care. Our latest claim to fame, I guess the thing I'm most excited about, is kind of our support for Urge and the Windows Media Player. We have played with and are working with Office 2007. However, I'm not ready to say that it's ready for prime time. You could probably look to CSUN for that. But I think that one of the most exciting things that we're doing in Vista is we are actually replacing our Surfboard product, which has been our computer system, with a full line of Windows Vista Media Center products. And those are going to include PVRs. They're going to include remote control, access to your cable, access to the electronic program guide. And when I'm talking about a machine, I'm talking about Core 2 Duo processors, 500 gigabytes of storage minimum, 1 gigabyte of RAM, HD video output, DVD burner, and this is just on our basic models. So, and they're all going to have Windows Home Premium Edition built in. So, you know, this is something that we're very excited about. Microsoft has been a great partner to us. Dan is just an incredible, incredible person. If that guy said that he's going to have information back to you folks, trust me, I've been working with Dan for almost, for a little less than a year, and he is very responsive. The guy must—I don't know how close he is to a nervous breakdown, because all of us adaptive technology companies have just been driving them nuts. So, you know, my hat's off to Microsoft. It has been very much working with them and with their support and participation that we've been able to release the way we have and as smoothly as we have.
Well, that's wonderful, and I'm glad to see the cooperation between yourselves and Microsoft. That is absolutely critical in order for, us to... reach the holy grail, right, of total accessibility to everything that the sighted enjoy, for sure. One of the things that feel kind of holds system access back a little bit compared to the other offerings in the access technology field is configurability. Would you like to talk a little bit about that, and perhaps about something called Scripture?
Well, I'll talk about configurability. How's that? As far as configurability, I mean, we offer a lot of configurability to the degree of, you know, you can set your pitch, you can set your rate, you can set all these different things. The problem that we find with current adaptive technology is that there's so much to it that where do you start teaching folks? We are more of a task-oriented accessibility device as opposed to a one-size-fits-all. If you want a one-size-fits-all, you know, that you're going to do every single little thing, hey, by all means, you should try JAWS or WindowEyes or HAL and see if they work for you. If you want to turn the computer on and use it within a little bit and access your email and, you know, do the things you need to do at work, do the things you need to do at home with the most popular software out there on the market,
and take it with you.
Then you're going to definitely want to look at system access. As far as configurability, the only thing I'm going to say about Scripture publicly is that there's a lot more configurability coming, and we're definitely looking forward to that.
Well, I will say that I, for one, am really, really excited about the upcoming increase in configurability, because I would like to be able to at some point say that, hey, I can use system access on the job, for instance. And if something doesn't work the way I need it to, then I can make it do so.
Daryl, we have a caller already.
The beauty of one more comment on that, Jeff, if
sure.
you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
The beauty of the way that we're approaching configurability, and this is the last thing I'm going to say about it, is that our configurability will allow people that are currently able to configure other things to configure our screen reader, and it's never going to interfere with the way that our user experiences his system access session. It's not going to be where the user's ever going to have to learn how to do this level of configuration. I think that Serotech has set itself apart in the last 5 years in being able to develop a community of users that contribute to it, things like community-supported accessible web, which is more commonly known as Seesaw. That's the client-side labeling of links, where we have over 3,000 websites that our members have, our community members have labeled over the last 5 years. That's just, or 4 years. That's incredible to me. So we really believe in the community aspects. We attribute, I attribute that to Matt Campbell and his constant reminding me of the open source community early on, and his instruction to me as to this is how you build it. This is how the open source community does it, and it's really contributed to the mindset of this company as to we really want to share. And there's a lot of people in our community that want to share, but just, you know, don't want to take classes and classes and classes to learn it.
Well, right. I will say that I would just like to say that, you know, Seesaw, the ability to, for a community, basically the community placing alt tags on websites, that's pretty incredible. And let's go ahead and take the caller.
Okay. Hello, caller. Welcome to Main Menu Live, and you're speaking to Matt and Mike at Ceratech.
Hello, Matt and Mike. Hats off to both of you for doing so many outstanding things. I've been with Freedom Box for, many years, and I have got a question, and if this requires my answer, if this requires an answer at some future time, that's fine. First of all, your surfboard was, the one thing good about the surfboard was, I had never used it, but the one thing about it is that people could not mess it up because no one could get to the system per se. Now, if someone gets one of your Windows machines, let us suppose that somebody accidentally does something with the Windows system. Will there be a way whereby someone can easily restore everything back to its defaults? Also, do you foresee a day someday when possibly the Windows system, let's say somebody gets a Windows machine, they could zap the system information to a flashcard-like device, thereby, when they got in a pinch, they could restore, they could reinstall Windows without any sighted assistance. I will hang up and listen to your answer.
Okay. The beauty of the Ceratech products is that our support team has the ability to remotely access your machine with your permission, of course. So if you get in a pinch, you know, it's simple as picking up the phone and calling one of our support folks and saying, hey, I'm in a pinch. Can you pop in and take a look around? As long as it's one of our machines and as long as it pertains to our software and something that isn't talking or what have you, we pop in and we fix it for you. Now, granted, we're not going to go in there and, you know, update all your software for you, but I know that our team does do quite a bit with the remote access to fix people's machines. Our surfboards, the only machine that really didn't allow you to access the operating system was our Surfboard Basic, which is the $999 unit. And while we've had that SKU out there for years, I can't remember the last time we sold one of those. Most of the time, our customers buy the surfboard our surfboard enhanced units, and we really have not had any problems with people going into the operating system and goofing something up. Granted, there's the tinkerer out there, and
it's also
the answer
worth
to your
mentioning that it's harder to goof up with Vista, because with the new user account control feature of Vista, you have to explicitly authorize anything that's done system-wide, you know, through a special dialogue that's very distinctive. It has its own sound, and it's very clear about what you need to do. So I would say it's harder to goof your system up under Vista.
Man,
I assume is accessible with system access, correct?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay, yeah, we are both accessible on the desktop and when we access you remotely and with the keys, of course.
Okay, this is a good segue into a question that
I think I cut into the second half of your answer.
Oh, the only other thing is that when it comes to zapping Windows back, we have full support for Windows Restore. And you know, that's a way you can bring it. So if you goof up your computer today and still you can get it to talk, I mean, we can just, you know, through Windows, you can just bring it back to the way it was yesterday. And Windows generally self-heals itself. And I've actually used System Restore a couple times in Vista throughout the testing process. And it is really, really awesome. It really does a great job. And by the way, that brings me to the upgrade path. when it comes to upgrading from another operating system, from XP to Vista, we talk all the way through from the beginning to the end. If you have it installed on XP, we're going to talk to you at every step of the way. We're never going to leave you from the beginning all the way up to when Vista first takes, you know, starts running. So you're never going to be without without accessibility throughout that process.
So I guess that answers the question of a talking installer, huh?
Well, I mean, there is... Yeah, for upgrades. I mean, there is a way to make the Windows installer talk. I've heard. Now, we haven't been able to get it to do that. but granted, we haven't tried that hard either. So, I mean, it may very well be there. But, you know, generally, you're going to find that that Vista is installed on machines from the factory, or you're going to upgrade. Those are the two main ways that I think people are going to get it, especially considering the new needs that people have for hardware. So generally, you're not going to just go out to, you know, you're not going to run out to Best Buy or CompUSA, spend $300 on Vista Ultimate, and put it into your old 3-year-old computer. You'd rather go out and spend $600 on a new computer and include Vista. So, you know, that's really not, I don't think that the fact of being able to do a fresh install from the DVD is that big a deal anymore.
Okay.
Okay, so I'd like to ask you guys, what did it take to go to Vista specifically? You know, talking about the no hooking the system and any new strategies that you want to talk about.
You want to rephrase that a little bit?
Well, I think that where we're headed here is there's been a great deal of concern in reference to security and things like that concerning Windows Vista and screen reading technology being able to be utilized in that environment. And I know that Matt, you've
that's
been,
why we're not a screen reader.
There you go. So I just wondering. I know you've already mentioned UAC. What about fast user switching? Is that something that is currently available with System Access?
Absolutely.
That's great. So you could just be in one user and switch to the other, and you'll have speech in both areas.
If you want it in both, or you can do it to where you have speech on one user account, but not on the other one, except on the Windows logon screen when you go to switch again.
Wow.
So, is this all going to work? Like, say somebody has the U3 key with System Access on it. How is that going to be upgraded to support Vista?
Now, first, fast user switching does not work when running off a U3 key.
Okay.
Due to security constraints, the System Access has to be installed on the hard drive to do fast user switching.
Okay.
But if you have a U3 key, that'll be upgraded to Vista through a normal System Access update. It'll happen with very little fanfare. It'll just install the update, and then, you know, from that point on.
Yeah, I mean, if you have System Access now, you've already got the update, so you've had it for 3 weeks. So
actually, come to think of it, you will need to buy a new U3 smart drive because the U3 platform itself has not supported Vista up until recently. And Mike, I don't know if
they're actually upgrading the firmware. I actually got an update announcement the other day. It was a trip out of a Memrex drive, and I got
keys.
Yeah, and out of the SanDisk as well. So the one that I carry in my wallet, which is mine, and we not the one that I've been flashing around using for demos, it's prompting. So U3 is on top of it, and they're upgrading firmware. So there's no need to do that. You know, to go ahead and buy a new U3 drive. They're it's field upgradable.
One of the questions that was asked during Microsoft's part of Main Menu Live tonight was concerning Windows Media Center inside of Windows Vista. And I know you touched on it briefly, Mike. I didn't know if you wanted to expound on it as far as what support is available in System Access for Windows Media Center.
Due to some minor delays, mostly with Microsoft and things of that nature in the last month or so, having to do with Media Center, I'm sure you've read the news. you know, we've worked in Media Center. We've been able to get it to talk. I've been able to get the menus to work, change around in television stations. Now, you know, now that once we release the new Media Center PCs within the next month or so for our fifth anniversary, we'll have a lot more information, including, you know, documentation on how to use it. The biggest thing is, of course, finding a TV card that works with Media Center in its native form and not some proprietary TV tuning software. And that was really the challenge for me. And I found one that's a stick that you plug into the USB drive, so you can literally walk up to a Windows Media PC and plug in your memory stick, you know, your U3 drive and this TV thing, and automatically have access to everything on it. So it is in its infancy right now, but it is working, and what Dan said is true. There's a couple of places that are kind of beyond our repair, but Microsoft is assuring us that they're working on it, and we've got people that we're working with within Microsoft already that we're communicating with to help us with workarounds in between.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Excellent. That Media Center experience sounds kind of exciting there. We have a caller. Go ahead, caller. You're on with Mike and Matt and Main Menu Live.
Hi, good evening. I am not familiar. Well, this is my first time hearing about the system access, and I have two questions. One of them is the clarification. Is that true that when I start installing Windows Vista and I unload it, Windows XP, and if I use system access, it's going to talk me all the way through it?
Yes.
Okay. And
all the way through.
Okay. And this is, I'm not sure if this is the right question, but since you said it's working with the Internet Explorer 7, I know a lot of websites these days using the visual verification. Is there any way that system access can read that?
No, unfortunately, nobody can do captures. But we do work with itself.
By design, visual verification is designed so that a computer can't tell what the letters are. So, unfortunately, visual verification by definition cannot work with
assistive technology for
the blind.
If you have a visual verification problem, ask the web developer to fix it, and hopefully
don't get
that
started.
You don't get me started on visual verification.
Though he did get Google to fix theirs.
Hey, amen. Go, Daryl.
Aw, thanks.
What a loudmouth.
That's right.
So let's talk now about Vista applications, and let's now talk about Windows Mail, Calendar, and Contacts. Are you guys compatible with these three applications that are new in Vista?
Yep. We do work very well with Windows Mail, Windows Contacts, and Windows Calendar is getting there. It should be pretty much done by the end of the week. It's one of those things that is just it's a battle because there's not that much accessibility in it. Again, it's back to the same thing with the Media Center. But that we feel pretty secure that we should have hammered out by the end of this week. And not to worry, if you have our software, or even if you download a trial, the software updates itself, a little more of that automatic versus stick thing. Whenever you run it, it just installs updates.
Okay, great. So, hey, the new Alt Tab function in Vista has changed. It's now called Windows Flip. Is this still accessible?
Absolutely. You won't know the difference.
Really? And how about any other user interface experiences like the new search dialogues and so on?
Search we're getting to. It's a little tricky because the way that it works is as you're typing in, stuff is happening. So it's kind of like a DHTML type of thing where you're typing and things are happening in another window. And we're playing with ways to do that are intuitive, that make sense without making your cursor jump all over the place. search is functional for sighted folks right now, I think, but we haven't figured out a good interface for it yet for blind folks, really, to be quite candid. And I'm not going to put an interface out there just to say we do it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So also, how about sidebar and any of the other new features? And also for items that aren't yet working yet, like search, are there alternatives?
Well, sidebar, I mean, search kind of works. I mean, it just doesn't work the way that Microsoft, I mean, you can go in and you can type in something that you're looking for, and then you can tab into the results and look for them. The thing is that what we don't have working in search is where you're typing and it's telling you what you're looking, you know, it's bringing up stuff as you're typing it. Does that, you know what I'm saying? So if you're looking for Mike Smith, and you've got the way it works is if you've got five Mikes in your phone book, it'll bring up Mike, and then if you've got Mike Stevens and you type in Mike S, it'll bring up Smith and Stevens, and then when you type in the M, it'll bring up Smith. You see what I'm saying? So we're trying to figure out a way to make that talk right. But right now, if you just type in a search and you tab into the window, you're going to find your results. As far as sidebar, sidebar is really not that useful. I mean, it's cool. The gadgets are neat if they're accessible, which some of them are, most of them aren't. It's just fancy HTML and DHTML, nothing that you can't get out of Windows Live or whatever. Again, it's just a lot of even sighted people that I've talked to that are using Vista, they turn it off. They don't want it taking up, you know, desktop space.
Possibly another fumble like Active Desktop was in 98.
Right, okay. So are you working pretty well with Live.com now?
Yes, we have been for months. We've been working with Live. We have accessibility for DHTML and IE for forever. I mean, for at least for what, Matt, 7 or 8 months, something like that.
Since last April.
Yeah, you guys have been really innovating in some of those areas, and that's very impressive. Hey, we have a caller. Hello there, caller. You're on with Daryl, Jeff, and Mike and Matt with Freedom Box.
Hey, Daryl and Jeff. It's Glenn from New York. I want to congratulate guys on the program format. Like it a lot. And Mike and Matt, great job on System Access. It's a wonderful product. Two quick questions. Any information on Scripture in terms of when you're going to put more information out publicly? Would that be a CSUN debut?
It would probably be, you'd probably get something around CSUN. We've got a lot of stuff. We've got a lot of stuff that we're working on right now that are at varying levels of development. And Scripture is one of those things that just kind of got out. It really never meant it to get out. Stay tuned. I really can't say much more about it than that.
Okay, and secondly, do you have a price point for the new the product replacing the surfboard, your new Windows PCs?
Sure. The media centers are going to start at $1,495. And $1,495 is going to get you a Core 2 dual processor running at about 1.83 gigahertz, which it's not your average 1.83 gigahertz processor. It's a Core 2 Duo, which rocks.
Oh, absolutely.
It's going to come with a gigabyte of RAM, but I'm talking about 1024 speed
DDR2
RAM, front side bus RAM. It's going to come with a 500 gigabyte hard drive standard, Windows Vista Home whatever it is, Ultimate
Premium,
Home Premium. I'm getting confused with all these darn names. A wireless keyboard remote, DVD burner, and then you can add the TV, you know, a TV tuner, and you can if you max it out, you can get it like to 1.5 terabytes and 20 gigs of RAM, and it's crazy. But they're very high end machines. This is not your average Walmart machine, or Best Buy machine. If you want those, by all means, buy one. But this is a machine that you're going to have for a couple years. They come with a 3-year warranty. They're just creme de la creme machines.
Now, related to that, are you going to be providing support for the TV tuner And what, being that they are media center, what type of noise, you know, fan noise can we expect from these machines?
Well, the fans are very quiet. These new units are going to be about the size of a VCR or a DVD player. So they will fit in your living room. So they're going to be very, very quiet. TV tuner wise, I mean, if we require support for the TV tuner, Matt and I didn't do our jobs right. And really, that's, you know, the buck stops here. I mean, you know, when you see something out there that doesn't work well, Matt and I are the ones to talk to about it. And really, if we do our jobs right, the tuner should work. It shouldn't require any support. Does that make sense?
All right. Well, thanks a lot, and continued success.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much for calling. And I have one last question from this end, guys, and that is, will there be a future release of System Access that will work on the 64-bit version of Vista?
I think that the biggest thing, and Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, that's kind of stopping us from working on 64-bit Vista right now is just a matter of compiling for it.
It'll take a little development work aside from, well, the other thing is getting me a 64-bit machine to test on.
Yeah, right. Hey,
well,
listen, we're a small company.
I'll be buying my own machine. I'll be buying my own new machine pretty soon. So it's coming with a minute, and the way that System Access is. Given the architecture of System Access, we expect a minimum of work to support 64-bit. So I can't give you an ETA or a time frame, but it won't take that much work, and it's coming.
Well, excellent. Thank you. Thank you very much. And can you tell us? Can you tell us about Office support? What upgrades are going to be available for maybe full support in Excel? Or I know you mentioned Office 2007 is on the way. Anything
yes.
else you'd like to say about either of those?
Sure. I'll give you a couple of tidbits of shameless self-promotion here. We're going to be providing full support for Office 2007 and 2003. Nothing before that. If it happens to work before that, hallelujah, it's great.
But
we're
not
sticking to
my old copy of 2000 anymore.
And we're not going to do it. It's just not. It doesn't make sense. And to that end, we're going to have full support for Excel. We're going to have full support for Word, for Outlook and the Outlook calendar, what's that other one? For PowerPoint. Yeah, we're going to have full support for that, and we expect to have that in beta form by CSUN and in final form by the conferences this summer. So it's definitely coming, but again, I don't like releasing things. I really try very, very much to, and I'm sure Matt appreciates this, to not let marketing drive our development cycle. We release stuff when it's ready, and that's why we released Vista 3 weeks ago, because it was ready, not because, oh, we should hold on to it till the 30th. I don't care if we were the first ones out on the market, and we are the first ones out on the market with a fully released version, not a public beta or anything else, but it's just, it was ready, and that's exactly the way we look at Office. And with things like Braille, which we'll be introducing within this year, same thing. When it's ready, it'll be out there, but it's coming, and it's something that's being worked on, and that is on the roadmap for this year.
Well, that's very impressive, and certainly the full Office support, definitely Excel will certainly round out my day job and enable me to fully use System Access for that. We do have a caller. Hello there, caller. Welcome to Main Menu Live, and say hi to Mike and Matt with Saratech.
Yeah, hi, Mike. Hi, Matt. Rich Costa.
Hi.
Long time no here.
Hey! How are you,
yeah,
sir?
Yeah, so you guys, when you were down here in Long Island a couple of years ago, I was just wondering, is there any way of freeing access working with things like PDAs as well? Because I know there has been some Has been a whole lot.
No, we're strictly Windows desktop. Yeah, I mean, a great product for PDAs is MobileSpeak Pocket. They're close friends, and it's a great, very stable platform. Edward and his team over at Code Factory run circles around us when it comes to Windows Mobile. Just like we run circles around him when it comes to the desktop, so it's fair.
Mm-hmm. And Mike,
I've been also
MobileSpeak
hearing
Pocket
in some of the reviews on... I don't know if you've seen some on the Blind Tech list, but some of the information about Vista was saying that they were, I'm glad that you don't have the problem, but that they weren't going to be supporting open source programs and all, and I was just wondering what your take was on that.
Yeah, I don't know. I can tell you, Richard, that, I mean, that would have been a better question for Dan, but I can tell you that, you know, Vista is very dependent on things like code signing. And this is because consumers demanded security. If you've got 95% of the market, you know, you better be, it's your corporate responsibility. And that goes in whatever market you're in. If you're a major market leader, you have a corporate responsibility to take care of that market. And Microsoft has just decided, you know, unless code is signed properly through signing authorities like VeriSign and various other code signing, or we approve it through various Microsoft logo programs that they approve, it's just not going to happen. So open source projects may work, but they may cause some challenges. But not because Microsoft is intentionally being the bad guy and saying, well, we don't want open source or trying to stunt it. It's just a matter of security. As a matter of fact, if you install stuff in Linux, it requires you to, even for the same open source stuff, it requires you to do things as an administrator.
Right.
And
I think
it's worth noting that the only thing where code signing is an absolute must is device drivers. And that even on the 64-bit version of Vista. So if that's what you're talking about, then you won't find that's really an issue for open-source projects. But I'm not sure I understood what you were talking about with regard to the issue that came up on that mailing list.
Yeah, well, let's just... wow.
But since it's not really related to us...
Yeah, it's not really related to accessibility, but Richard, feel free to keep us in the loop on what you may find out over on main menu at acbradio.org and other resources there. And thanks for calling, Richard. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Matt from Saratech for coming on the show with us.
Do we want to wait and see if there are any more callers?
Well,
we don't have any more callers right now, actually.
All right. And we don't have any MSN messages either. So
either we've put everybody to sleep or we've answered everybody's questions.
I think you've answered everyone's questions. Looking forward to seeing.
Jeff.
Are you going to CSUN, Matt?
We just got a call. Actually, let's bring the caller in here. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hello, this is Joe Sikora from Westchester, Pennsylvania.
Hello, Joe.
Hi. I had a couple questions.
Okay.
One concerning Vista and one concerning Freedom Box. With Vista causing, you know, everybody to be scrambling, is it going to cause a negative in terms of people, you know, non-blindness, developers or site developers maybe backing off the accessibility while they're catching up to getting themselves up to speed with the product?
I think that you'll find, Joe, that a lot of the things that are going on in Windows Vista should actually facilitate even more accessibility in product development. So I think, you know, it's really hard to say, right? It's going to be difficult to sit here and say, yes, we can guarantee you that things will be better. But if you know, with UI automation and all the other things that Microsoft is doing,
It really does look like things will be a lot better. There's a lot more
accessible Microsoft.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Joe, nicer, more accessible.
Joe, what was your second question?
Secondly, I've gotten myself spoiled in that when I use the browser with FreedomBox, I can maintain my place in a links list very nicely from reading the newspaper and so forth. Yet when I've been using Explorer, no matter what product I use, I found maintaining my place to be a little bit more challenging. You have to keep doing a lot of renavigating.
Is that with system access or other screen readers, Joe?
With both.
Okay.
And I'm sure I hope that will get better in the future.
Okay.
But you're saying that you're having to navigate a lot with system access or with the other products?
Well, I found it to be true for both, really.
Ah, okay.
Joe, you might want to take that offline with Ceratec as well as the other
screen
reader
vendors. Sure, I understand. I'm sorry, and if I've erred in
not a problem,
that
Joe.
Now, I apologize.
Not a problem, Joe.
No problem at all.
Okay. We'll let you go, Joe. We're going to get GW Micro on here in just a minute.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Joe. Go ahead, Daryl.
Well, thank you very much, Matt and Mike, for coming on the show, and looking forward to seeing you guys at CSUN.
Sure. You going to feed us?
I'll at least be there remotely.
Oh, you'll be there.
Better feed me, Daryl.
It's my turn, huh?
Your turn this time. I paid last time. It's your turn, buddy.
I will be at the ACB convention in Minneapolis.
We do have one more caller. Caller, go ahead. You're on Main Menu Live.
Oh, okay.
Hello, how you doing?
Good.
Love your show. Calling from New York City. My name is Jay.
Hello.
Hi, Jay.
Hello. I would like to know if you're going to be working with FreedomBox, if you're going to be working with MySpace.
Part of MySpace?
The MySpace page?
MySpace is a website.
I know what it is, but I'm saying what part of MySpace?
Let's say when you go directly to the main page, or going
the biggest
to
problem with
page,
MySpace right now is the darn music, that every time you go to somebody's website, it like the music drowns you out. You can't turn it off.
Yeah.
Well, what about the profile page?
What about
your profile?
Yeah. What about the profile page?
I really haven't done that. It's not something that we've really gotten a lot of requests for. I would suggest that you send an email, if you're a FreedomBox user, even if you're not, to shoptalk, shoptalk, at freedombox.info, and that's where we take all of our suggestions. I know that's a weird thing, but a weird address for suggestions, but it's shoptalk at freedombox.info.
Cool.
I promise it.
Okay, so great. Thank you so much.
Huh?
She said thank you.
Would you like to go ahead and give out your contact information before we let you go?
More shameless self-promotion? Are you kidding? I'm
sure.
The king of that, buddy. It's Ceratec Corporation. We're located in Minneapolis, land of the ACB conference this year. And the URL is www.freedombox.info. You can take everything we've spoken about tonight for a 30-day no obligation test drive, okay, and try it, and if you like it, then you can pay us for it. You can call us at 866-202-0520. I'm going back to my cave, Matt's going back to his basement, and we're going to go back to developing. Thank you so much, and Daryl, you owe us dinner, and Jeff, you got to buy Jeff dinner too.
That's right.
Oh, wait a minute. I don't know about all that. We'll have to see.
Oh, come on.
Okay.
But we'll see you at CSUN. Thanks.
Thanks.
All right,
good night, guys.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye.
Next, we're going to hear from Dolphin, all about HAL for Vista. They're going to give us a brief update here. It's a pre-recorded segment. It lasts about 7 minutes. And meanwhile, while that's going on, we'll take a bit of a break here. And then we will get GW Micro staff on board, and we'll have them on next. Here on Main Menu Live.
Jeff, can you disconnect me from Skype?
Yeah, we'll work on
that. Oh, take care, Matt. Have a good night.
Good night.
Dolphin's Windows Vista commitment to customers. I'm Dave Williams. Dolphin customers can be assured of the compatibility of the HAL screen reader, Luna and Luna Plus magnifiers, and the screen reader magnifier Supernova with Microsoft's Windows Vista. Dolphin customers have long valued the Dolphin ethos that customers should have access to the same first-rate functionality at the same affordable price, irrespective of which Microsoft Windows operating system their PC has installed. This certainly holds true, as Dolphin are proud to announce support in versions 8.01 of our desktop access range. A simple one price, support for all Vista editions, Supernova, HAL, Luna and Luna Plus, will all offer the same excellent functionality as version 7.03, but will introduce support for Home Basic, Home Premium, Business, Ultimate and Enterprise editions of Windows Vista, as well as continuing to offer support for Windows XP Home and Windows XP Professional. Hazel Shaw, the Group Marketing Manager with Dolphin Computer Access, says, "Why should visually impaired people continually have to compromise? Our users want their favourite Dolphin software to access all editions of Windows Vista. Following a year's extensive Windows Vista testing, partnering with Microsoft, Dolphin's version 8.01 software will offer this no-compromise solution." End quote. Scheduled for release during the second quarter of 2007, version 8.01 demonstrates Dolphin's commitment to ensuring that visually impaired people retain the right to choice. Dolphin customers who purchase their product after the release of Windows Vista will be entitled to a free upgrade to Dolphin software version 8.01. Version 8.01 will also be localized and immediately available in all the current version 7 languages. Existing version 7 customers can also upgrade free of charge should they decide to upgrade their PC to one of the identified Vista editions: Home Basic, Home Premium, Business, Enterprise and Ultimate. Version 7 users who decide not to be early adopters of Windows Vista will not be charged more in future for not moving to version 8.01 immediately. Dolphin's primary goal is to retain user choice. Dolphin requests that new customers purchasing software after the release of Microsoft Windows Vista and version 7 customers who are deciding to upgrade their PCs at this time should register their interest with a local Dolphin dealer or contact Dolphin direct. The free upgrade to version 8.01 will be available for download from the Dolphin website, and users should be aware that the file size will be relatively large and a fast internet connection is recommended. After 60 days, the upgrade will become chargeable at the normal upgrade price. The free upgrade is restricted to Dolphin customers with version 7.01, 7.02 and 7.03. Version 8.01 will not include additional functionality and is only suitable for customers moving to the Windows Vista operating system. Version 7 customers who choose not to upgrade their operating system and therefore do not move to version 8.01 will not be penalized financially when purchasing future Dolphin upgrades. Dolphin Pen customers should note that there may be a nominal charge for covering the cost of postage and packaging. So let's take a quick look at some of the anticipated frequently asked questions and answers. I'm somebody who has version 6 of Dolphin's desktop access software and I'd like to move to version 8.01. Is this free? No, it's not. Version 8.01 is only a free upgrade for version 7 customers. Version 6 and earlier customers must pay the normal Dolphin upgrade price. So what if you're somebody who's going to wait for the first Windows Vista service pack before upgrading your PC? What should you do? In that case, there's no reason to download the version 8.01 upgrade, as this won't offer you any additional functionality under Windows XP Home and Windows XP Professional. As and when future Dolphin Access software comes available, you won't be penalized for not upgrading to version 8.01 at this time. Version 7 and version 8.01 customers will be charged the same amount for future upgrades. I want to download the free update to version 8.01, but the 60 days has passed. The 60 days limit is non-negotiable, and the standard upgrade price is applicable. Customers that register their interest by emailing Dolphin or contacting your local dealer will be notified as soon as version 8.01 is available. So, is this policy different if you own a Dolphin software maintenance agreement? Dolphin will not automatically send this update to SMA owners, as we anticipate that many SMA owners and multi-user license owners will not be upgrading their systems until later in the year. However, should an SMA owner require the upgrade to support Vista, this is available free of charge and is not subject to the 60-day restriction. What operating systems will version 8.01 support? Version 8.01 will support Microsoft Windows Vista Home Basic, Home Premium, Business, Enterprise, and Ultimate editions, as well as providing legacy support for Windows XP Home and Windows XP Professional. Customers looking for support for Windows 98, Millennium, NT, or 2000 will continue to be able to run or purchase version 7. When is version 8.01 due for release? Dolphin anticipates a release date early during the second quarter of 2007. My Dolphin software is a localized version. Is my upgrade different? Version 8 will be released in all of the currently available version 7 languages almost immediately. However, please note that the prompt files only will be translated, and there'll be no change to the existing version 7 manual. Chargeable upgrades will introduce the availability of an updated and localized manual. So that concludes this statement concerning Dolphin's commitment to Windows Vista. If you have further questions or you'd like to contact Dolphin regarding any of our desktop access products, or for that matter any of our other products, you can do so by visiting Dolphin on the web at www.yourdolphin.com.
You're listening to Main Menu Live, airing at 2 hours Universal on Wednesday. To participate in the show, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
That's right, and we'll be taking calls soon for Doug and Aaron from GW Micro. And let's see, if we push all the buttons right and get all the knobs twisted and all that nonsense, we should have everybody on board. Hello, Doug, Aaron, and Daryl.
Greetings.
Hi, everybody. And, wow, we're through 2 hours. Definitely needed a break there. Yeah, we definitely needed a break there, that's for sure. Well, welcome, GW Micro, to Main Menu Live. We're real happy that you're here tonight to talk to us all about all things new with WindowEyes and Vista.
Yes, we're pretty excited about it. It's a great opportunity, and I appreciate it. So hopefully we'll get some good demos and be able to talk about some cool things.
We already got a caller.
We already have a caller. And they like you, Doug. let's bring the caller in, and let's let everybody know, though, that we are going to wait a little bit of time here for the next caller so that we can actually get some information out to you before you actually start calling in. But let's take this call now. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hi, Jeff. This is John Gunn calling from Wisconsin.
Hello, John. How are you tonight?
I'm doing really great.
Ah, that's great. How can we help you?
Well, actually, give me a couple minutes because I know you're going to have a lot of calls here.
Okay.
But I wanted to comment. I've been a GW Micro user since 91.
Mm-hmm.
And I also do tech support for a company. And I also realize that probably not, and I can say this freely because I don't work for GW Micro. And before I forget, Doug, you and I have never met except for about 10 years ago. You probably don't remember, so this is not a setup. Just a double check. Okay.
Uh-oh, Doug, you're in trouble now.
Oh, he's in big
trouble.
Where's
he going with this yet?
Huh?
I'm not sure where you're going with this yet.
Oh, you're going to... Oh, just hang tight. So I've been a GW Micro user for, as I say, since probably the end of 91. And as I mentioned before, 95... percent, I think, of software issues are probably, and as I said before, I can say this freely because I work in tech support, but probably 95% is probably operator error. However, a company does realize that there is possibly 90, there's that 5% of the company error. Well, I want to share an experience that I've had. GW Micro and Aaron, especially to you. for the last 3 weeks, Aaron, you know what I'm talking about. We've been going around with screenshots and so on and so forth. At home, I use Windows 2000, and the load before start, I bet you, was a real big deal. However, in this version, things are working wonderful.
Great.
And my point is this. You know, you can talk about hype. Actually, I don't like the word hype, but my point is that for the 14 years that I've been with a customer, they always listen. You know, we can talk about the great things they've been doing with Windows Vista, and I think it's wonderful, but they didn't get that overnight. It took a lot of years, and I'm very serious when I say that. It's really nice when you can, you know, I was, when I installed the beta tonight, I was thinking, oh, geez, I better get ready to hold down that shift key. I didn't have to hold it down. It was just wonderful, and I think you guys should be commended, but not only for the Vista support, but really over the years that you guys have done your work on this.
I appreciate that very much, John. I think we're going to talk about some of those things that you brought up, because what you said, I think, is at the core of our beliefs, and that is to make sure that we have a strong, stable product as we're moving along. We don't want to just add fluffy features and things like that and come out with upgrades just because we have to get out upgrades to get income and things like that. And I think we're now starting to see that pay off, where we have stability, especially on a major release like Vista, because of the things that a full screen reader really has to do under Vista. We had to do quite a bit of work. And because of our stability, we're able to do that. So I appreciate that comment very much, because we do work hard for stability.
Well, it's kind of nice, because I was thinking, even though I have, you know, 2000 at home and XP at work, I'm thinking, you know, I read the blurb about, you know, we've addressed load before startup issues. I'm, well, that's great, but, you know, I'm only Windows 2000 at home. But you guys did address it. And one other comment I'm going to make, and this is...
Yeah, because we do need to get to...
I know, okay, and I'll hurry, Jeff, promise.
Okay, because, yeah, we do only have about 40 minutes left.
I understand. One thing I will comment is... over the GW years, if you want to call it. A couple of weeks ago, there was some issues on the list with music software. Well, I've been using Cakewalk Pro Audio 9, and if you guys look for the main menu archives, I've been using Cakewalk with WindowWise 4.0. So when they talk about music software, yeah, you guys even work with Pro Audio 9, even though probably today's standards is a dinosaur, but it works.
Okay, well, thank you, John, very much, and stay tuned, where there's a lot more to come here.
That sounds good. Thanks, guys. Keep up the work.
Thanks, John. Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll be opening up the phone lines here in just a few minutes here, after we get some preliminaries out of the way from GW Micro themselves. And so, Doug, it was a nice kind of a segue for John to call in and kind of bring these, you know, load before startup issues up and things like that. You made a major announcement today all about WindowWise version 6.1. Want to tell us about it?
Yes, we're all still pretty excited at the office about that we were able to get everything together. As I said, a full-fledged screen reader that you know, doesn't have the luxury of being able to pick certain applications or not being able to support Braille or things like that. We have to do it all. And not only do we have to do it all, we have to remain stable, and we have to be out there when Microsoft decides to hit us with new technology. And in 2006, they hit us with tons of technology. We had, of course, Vista, Office 2007, and even IE7 came out there. And so we supported all of that stuff. Actually, even before it came out, the Office 2007 we supported in our 6.0 version back in December before it even hit the shelf yet, and I think that was announced today as well. So, but the Vista support was the big one. It was a tremendous amount of work under the hood that we had to do. Again, we don't have the luxury of being able to support just certain applications. We have to do it all, and by doing that, we need, I don't want to get too detailed, but we need this off-screen model. We need our own video drivers to be able to get in there and be able to hook any application that we want. And it was a lot of work under Vista because of their security that they've added. And that security is a good thing, but it did make our lives a little bit difficult. And so we were, of course, going back and forth a lot with Microsoft on all of that. But in the end, it did pay off. We're extremely excited to be what I still consider the only full-fledged screen reader to actually ship on the day of a major operating system. And the only reason we're in public beta right now is because nobody had access to Vista before today. Very few people had access to Vista. And so our test bed was extremely small. And to keep our stability that we're so proud of, we felt that it was important to put out a public beta, get it in more people's hands, get some feedback, make sure that we're doing what we think we're doing. And that's the only way to really do it. So you'll see that all of our releases are always a public beta out there. We always get feedback from users. And that's the main reason why we're in public beta today. We could have shipped it. We could have called it 6.1 and later put out a 6.1.1 or whatever. But that's just not the way we work. So I think in the end it's just going to pay off, and people will see the proof in the pudding there. So.
Right. Now, and you not only did you do Vista, but there were some bug fixes in there for everybody, and just a really nice release. The release notes are quite long, and Aaron, you did a great job on that readme.
Well, thank you very much.
you man.
It does go through. I kind of talked about some of the new things, but we did, there was, I don't know, maybe 8 or 10 different, some bugs that we felt were substantial enough that they needed to be fixed in 6.1. A lot of them relating to IE7 and Firefox and things like that. So nothing huge. Again, I think 6.0 was extremely stable, very good. I feel very strong about it. I would not have put out 6.1 if it weren't for Vista. I don't think it was that necessary, but it was just good timing to put those fixes out there. And again, as you mentioned, the README talks about all that.
So once you're out of beta, what will be the cost for the upgrade?
If you're a 6.0 user, then the upgrade to 6.1 is free. The only difference is because Windows Vista is so new that it required a new installation. And because of that new installation, you will need a new CD. And in order to get the new CD, we are charging $5 just for the shipping and handling and the cost of the CD and the paperwork and all of that business. So for $5, we'll send you a brand new full install of 6.1, which, of course, will work with Windows 2000 and above, but it's required for Vista. If you don't have Vista, you don't need the CD. You can just go to our webpage and get the normal upgrade. So, again, if you're a 6.0 user, the upgrade to 6.1 is totally free.
Okay. Daryl, looks like we have a question from Chris on Messenger. Go ahead.
Yes, indeed we do. Chris would like to know about the speech synthesis support for Window Eyes in Vista. He asks, will it speak the same way?
Right. We've not found anything that doesn't work under Vista that did work under XP. So all the synthesizers that we supported in the past are still supported there today. Even the hardware ones that require drivers and devices and device drivers to be installed still are supported, like the TripleTalk or the DeckTalk USB. Those devices still function. And, of course, all the SAPI engines that are there and the DeckTalk Access 32 that we ship with WindowEyes is still, of course, supported and still shipped with 6.1.
Well, that's great.
Amazing.
Oh, yeah, that's really great. Okay. So, Doug, we asked Sarah Tech the same question, and so it bears that we ask you the same question. And it is, what did it take for you guys to actually get Vista done, and what kind of advantages does that offer the WindowEyes user in version 6.1?
As I mentioned, it was a substantial undertaking, and the main reason is because that we do need to intercept the video. We do need to have access to that. We need to be able to get applications that don't use MSAA or have a DOM or have UI automation support or iAccessible 2, which is a new add-on to MSAA. If they don't have those, or they don't have built-in OS type functions like standard edit boxes and things like that we know how to talk to, we need a backup mechanism. We support all of that stuff. We support MSA and IE2, all these things we support, but we need this backup mechanism of the off-screen model because we also have to support legacy applications and any application that doesn't support these guys. So we had to come up with our video driver to get our off-screen model populated as our backup mechanism. And in order to do that under Vista, things have changed. No longer does Vista really support the DCM under the true Vista video drivers. You can go to the old XP drivers and you can use DCM, but then you're kind of defeating a lot of the purpose of going to Vista in the first place. So we opted not to stay with the old technology. We decided to go with what Microsoft is setting as the standard now and the official way to do it. They never really officially supported DCM. They did only because they had to and there was no better way to do it. But now, using this new mirror driver technology, which is what it's called, mirror drivers have been around for a long time, but they didn't have what was necessary for a screen reader to really get the access that they needed. So now under Vista, they actually fixed the mirror driver problems based on feedback that we've given them and others and made that now accessible. So mirror drivers is the way to go. DCM is not there. And just to get all of that working, to be able to support all the new security mechanisms and be able to get ourselves where we need to be all the time, to support the the user account control and the login screens and all these things that you could possibly go to and just make all that stuff still remain the same. So, you know, from your perspective, running it, you're not going to notice any different from XP. And that's because we did our job correctly. But it was a tremendous amount of work under the hood that we had to do to make that happen.
That's great. Now, one of the things that I read in the README was the issue of upgrading video drivers. And thought you might want to touch on that, because there seems to be a really interesting, you know, well, because of the mirror driver, you know, something that you're able to accomplish now that wasn't be able to, you know, to be done in the past.
So you're referring to, I'm sorry, I missed the question there.
Well, the fact that now that you can upgrade your video drivers or change screen resolutions and nothing is affected.
Oh, correct, right.
On your
right.
side, yeah.
Right, the mirror drivers are basically kind of detached from the real video driver now. And in the past, we kind of got the information and it was up to us if the data went on to the real driver, and if we did something wrong, then it could mess up your system. Where now the video driver, the mirror drivers are off. Separate from the real driver, so we cannot affect that real driver. It doesn't really matter what you're running. You can be running XP video drivers. You can be running true Vista drivers. It doesn't really matter. The mirror driver is just going to kick in and just work for you. So that actually is a very positive thing.
Okay, great. Well, while we were on the issue of UAC, you kind of mentioned it already, and so I wanted to touch on that before we get to some user interface things, and we'll ask Aaron some questions about that. So what about this user account control? Should that be a seamless experience for users, and is that going to be compatible?
Right. It definitely should be seamless. And what the user account control dialog is, I'm not sure that was ever fully explained. It took me a while to finally get used to it. But typically when you run an application that requires some sort of administration rights, even though you may be logged into the operating system with administrator rights, and let's say I launch RegEdit, to make some registry changes. Well, it's going to say, wait a minute, I want to protect the admin from himself. So it pops up this user account control dialog, which actually has switched you from your normal desktop off to the secure desktop, which is the same desktop you use to log in. Again, for security purposes, so they pop you over to this secure desktop, and they pop up a dialog saying, you know, do you want to continue? And if you aren't logged in as an admin, then it will give you the option of being able to log in with an admin password and all that business. But it was crucial to obviously get that to speak. And so we made all that seamless. The ease of access control panel is, I think Dan was talking about that. That allows us to be able to get into some of these areas so we can register ourselves automatically. Our install will automatically register ourselves with the ease of access. You'll notice that we put ourselves in there. But you don't have to even go into ease of access. You don't have to mess with it as a user. We just put ourselves in there. That allows us to get into the login screen. It allows us to get to the user account control. And it's all totally seamless. One thing that I noticed, like if you're using Narrator with it, and of course Narrator is a great tool in a pinch, but one thing that they did with Narrator is that they actually fully unload it when the user account control dialog comes up. They reload it on the secure desktop so that it can read the user account dialog. Then they unload it when you say yes to the user account dialog, and then they reload it on the user account. It's a very sluggish, you know, procedures you're going through that agonizing thing. Where with WindowEyes, we don't have to do that. We just automatically sent you over there, and you'll notice that it's, you don't even realize it's gone over to the secure desktop. It just speaks. And so again, we've done all the under the hood stuff to make it look seamless to you, but I'm trying to get some sympathy from all the users out there.
Very, very good. Now, what about fast user switching and the user login window?
Yeah, so the fast user switching is kind of cool, because under XP that never really worked well, because again, the DCM and the video driver stuff, and we never really got that working. Microsoft never had much of an interest to get that working on their end, which is what would require to really get it working well. And so with Windows Vista, it actually now works very well. So you can have multiple users logged in with WindowEyes. You can, you know, log in and out of users, have WindowEyes and different things. As you switch users, of course, WindowEyes just switches to whatever voice and settings and things that the user had in that case. So that's just seamless now. It just works perfectly as you would expect it to work.
Does that even work well with external synthesizers too, Doug? You know, like some of these older...
Yeah, that's a problem, because you can't be sharing the COM ports or USB ports or things like that.
Okay.
So you would have a conflict if that were the case. You can't have two users using the same COM port or something like that.
Okay, but other than that, I mean, but that's not a WindowEyes issue.
Right.
I mean,
that's just
a limitation of the operating system.
Exactly. It would be no different than if I tried to have two other hardware devices hooked up to the same you know, device and trying to use it at the same time.
Yeah, it's like two people trying to dial out on a modem at the same time.
Exactly.
Which, you know, who knows?
Right. So and then I think your other question was just the main login screen.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, WinDevice now works flawlessly with that. The ease of access is what actually pumps us over there and puts us right in there as you would expect, and we speak that. So whether I do Control-Alt-Delete to go to the login, actually, what do they call that dialog? I'm not sure what Control-Alt-Delete is actually called, but that allows you to log off, switch users, bring up Task Manager, things like that. That also goes over the Secure Desktop. We just automatically speak in there. So all of the stuff that you would expect to speak does speak.
Okay, great. We're going to open up the phone lines. I'm going to flip the switch down here and release the line here. If any of you have any questions for Doug or Aaron, get a hold of us. 866-400-JEFF, 866-400-5333, and we'd be happy to take your call. Now, because we want to make sure Aaron is not falling asleep.
Wide awake.
Yeah. We wanted to, and Doug, feel free to jump in here too, but we definitely wanted to give Aaron some opportunities here to talk tonight too. Wanted to talk a little bit about the user interface experience of Windows Vista. Not so much from a WindowEyes perspective, although it's certainly, you know, fine to relate it in that way. But I just had some questions about some of the things that, you know, let's say that Mary buys a brand new computer and she puts WindowEyes on it and she boots it up for the first time and, oh my gosh, you know, it's quite a shock to her system. Oh, we actually have a caller. Let's take the caller, and then we'll start with the start menu, Aaron. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Yes, what's been your experience? The guy at GW Micro trying to install Windows independently. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, great. That's a great question. This came up during the Microsoft presentation, Doug and Aaron, and this was having to do with, is there a talking installer available for Windows Vista? And do either of you know at what level that can be done in, you know, independently?
You can run Narrator at a certain point during the install. You could do it under XP as well to some degree. There is no fully automated, you know, speaking install of Windows, and that's very unfortunate. And we've expressed our displeasure about that to Microsoft and have tried year after year, month after month, to get them to do something about it. And they know it's a problem, and they say they're going to address it, but we haven't. of course, seen anything about that yet. But, I mean, XP and Vista both have the ability to do automated installs. The problem with that is that your average user is not going to know how to do that. It's very complicated stuff. We do some of the automated stuff for our Smalltalk Ultra System Restore CDs, and it took several weeks just to get down installing the operating system itself automatically. Then you had to install applications on top of that and different things like that. So, like I said, you can run Narrator at a certain point. I don't remember exactly what it is, but I think Vista, even during the installation, has a checkbox or something like that that you can check so that you do have speech when you're able to have speech. But the initial portion of the install, when it's copying files to your drive, even partitioning the drive and doing things like that, unfortunately, that stuff still doesn't speak, and that's the big catch.
Oh, bummer. Hey, we have another caller for you guys. Welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hi, it's Mary Ellen from Scottsdale, Arizona.
Hello, Mary Ellen.
I have a real, real quickie question, and I hope I'm not tricking you guys, but will the Smalltalk Ultra run Vista? I mean, are you making plans for that to work with Vista?
Well, the existing model that is there, I don't know that it has the horsepower to do that. And so when I say the existing model, you can read into that one. But so I think we are tied at the moment to say any more than that. But I think there will be something in the near future that we can do with that, yes.
Okay,
oh,
does that answer
great.
Your question?
That answers my question, and I'm going to hang up. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, great. 866-400-JEFF, 866-400-5333. All right, Aaron, so let's start with the start menu, because really that's probably the first thing that someone's going to see. And how is it really different? I mean, if you look at the README file, it really can be kind of, especially for new Vista users, it can be kind of scary.
It can be. I like to cover all the details, so I probably went a little too in-depth maybe, but when you first boot Vista up, even for new users, even though it's a different interface, it still has a lot of similarities from XP. You have a desktop, you have a start menu, you have a taskbar, you have a system tray. You can still tab between all of those things. So it's different, but yet it's still the same. But the start menu is probably one of the more different items in Vista, in that under XP, the start menu basically used a lot of different menus. It expanded. You know, whether you went into all programs, that would expand into another menu. You could set up the control panel to expand into a menu. And in all programs, when you opened up a different program group, that would expand into a different menu. So you could have menus going all over the place. What they did in Vista, in terms of trying to reduce the number of menus you have flying all over your screen, is they keep the start menu self-contained. So when you go into all programs, rather than opening up a system of menus, it actually opens up into like a little tree view control. So everything is contained inside the start menu. You can move up and down the tree view, you can open nodes, you can close them, different things like that. You still have access to everything like you did under XP. It's just it's all in the start menu. They added other features in the start menu, like the ability, an integrated desktop search. So if you want to find files and folders and applications on your machine, you can just type in the text in the search button, and the results come up in that same area where your All Programs Tree View does, so that you can go through the results of different files and things like that. It's kind of like the Google desktop search, in that it indexes all the files on your machine. So it's a real quick way. When I first saw that search button, it was driving me crazy because I would always do a Windows key and then R to get into the run dialog. Well, you bring up the Windows key in Vista, and you type an R, you type an R. So that, I had to get over that. But I didn't really like it at first, but then I started realizing that I was having a hard time remembering how to get to certain places. And just for example, if I wanted to get to Windows Defender, and I couldn't remember how to do that, I could just go into that search box, type Defender, and the first thing that would pop up in my list was Windows Defender. I could just hit Enter, and I'd be there right away. So those are probably the two newest features of the Start menu. And of course, there are still favorites like Documents, which used to be called My Documents. It's now just called Documents. My Computer is now just called Computer. So you still have access to all of those things, the control panel, the different shutdown items, and things like that. So it's different. Yet the concept of a start menu is still the same. You can still access all your programs and things like that.
That's great. Well, we actually have a caller, and we actually have some questions from our main menu at acbradio.org messenger account. So, Daryl, you want to read us that first?
Certainly. Well, we'll get pretty much the same question from Tony and from Carl. They want to know, we know that WindowEyes can't talk during a Vista installation from the ground up, but if someone has an XP machine and they want to upgrade to Vista, do you guys talk during that process?
Have we ever done that, Aaron? I'm not sure.
We actually haven't done that. I would say it will not work simply because of the massive changes that happen to the guts of your operating system and the way that WindowEyes is installed under XP versus the way it needs to be installed under Vista. I would say that's probably not a wise idea.
That's the key, because it's going to work at first on the XP part, but once it actually boots into Vista, WindowEyes needs to be installed completely different. So even though the upgrade transition is going to try to put WindowEyes over onto Vista, it doesn't know how to do it. We're not using DCM anymore. We're using mirror drivers, things like that, that it can't possibly handle.
That brings
so
up
my,
a really
my recommendation would be to uninstall WindowEyes on your XP system, launch Narrator, do the upgrade in that path, and then use Narrator on the Vista side as well, then install WindowEyes.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that because, boy, I think you could get yourself into a bad situation if you do it.
Yeah, your system is going to be in a really weird state. It's going to have, try to use the DCM stuff, and you just don't want to muck up your system that way. So I suggest uninstalling WindowEyes first.
Hmm. Okay, that's really good. Maybe, we'll try to really make that apparent to everybody because, man, you'd hate to have to support that nightmare. Let's bring in our caller here and welcome them to Main Menu Live. Hello, caller. You're here with GW Micro.
Yes, I'm going to ask Doug or a question about performance. With the new mirror drivers, obviously you're actually doing a dual task. Basically, you got the Windows part, using its own driver, but you're running a mirror driver on the side. Does that affect performance at all?
Well, really, when you look at it, it's not doing any more or any less work than it was before, because in the previous, it was kind of like a rifle barrel where we would see it first and then the video driver would see it after us. We would pass it on, or anybody else that might be in the DCM chain. Where with video drivers, they just all go out to all the mirror drivers. Same amount of work, it's just how they're dispatching that information to the drivers themselves. So we have not seen any speed degradation. In fact, we always kind of pride ourselves that we always try to optimize things more and more with each release, and I believe that you'll find it's even a little bit more peppy with the 6.1 release, even under XP. But I don't think you'll notice really any one way or the other, I don't know if you'd agree, Aaron, as far as the responsiveness of WindowEyes under Vista versus XP.
Yeah, I mean, Vista itself is a bit of a system hog, so as long as you've got the hardware to handle it, you're not going to notice anything with WindowEyes versus it not running.
The other question that I had is, how is it going to do on a 64-bit machine? That's what I'm going to put it on.
Well, all of my machines here are 64-bit machines. I've got a laptop that's 64-bit, and I've got a desktop here sitting on my desk. And then our test machines, some are using dual processor, some are using dual core, hyper threading, and we've got all combinations of all these things. So 64-bit CPU is no problem at all. The key factor is you want to, of course, at this point, make sure that you're just running the 32-bit version of Vista on that.
Now, are you working on the 64-bit version of WindowEyes?
Yeah, we've been asked this for a long time, even with Windows 2003 and that type of thing, is do we support this, or even XP, do we support the 64-bit version? And in the past, these 64-bit machines have been so expensive that it really wasn't an issue, wasn't enough need for us to put the priorities in it. Now that the price of hardware is certainly coming down, and of course the OSs are much more available, and people are becoming more educated on how they can do this, we'll certainly do that. I think the priority level will be raised for it, but we have not done anything to date on it. Part of the problem, too, is when you go to 64-bit OS, a lot of things break. And so, you know, I would be cautious for anybody just jumping right into a 64-bit OS, because if you've got device drivers, things like that, they may not be ready for that.
Okay. All right. Does that answer your questions?
Yes, thanks.
All right.
I'd also like to ask a related question concerning driver, the mirror driver.
Yeah, go ahead, Daryl.
Oh, okay. Is there any concern of applications that may fail to send information, or any situations where Vista doesn't send information to your mirror driver implementation?
Well, there is new technology that's coming out that is basically kind of dropping the whole OSM idea, because even on the mirror driver, whatever, even under the new Vista technology and everything, that we won't necessarily be able to get the text like we have. So we won't have our off-screen model for those applications. So the idea with that is, of course, to use UI automation or MSA or IA2 or one of those technologies, or the DOM, to be able to support those applications as we've been doing. Today, Vista doesn't ship with any of those applications, so we haven't really worried about it today. Those things will be coming. We're working with Microsoft to make sure that when that happens, they'll be seamless. But today we just don't see that.
Okay, thank you, Daryl. And we have a caller. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hi, Jeff, guys. It's Marvin Rush in Fort Worth. I have a question
for
you.
Hey, Marvin.
Hey, hope things are well. Great show tonight.
Thank you.
I have a question on as far as what are we going to see different when we install software with Vista using WindowEyes, because, you know, at home I tend to do a fair amount of installing software and, you know, testing things and all that. What are we going to see different with WindowEyes and Vista in that, arena?
Okay, can we go ahead and take that on air, Marvin?
You bet.
Okay, great, thanks.
Certainly, the installation of WindowEyes will have no effect at all on your system. So if you install WindowEyes, it has zero effect on your system. When you launch WindowEyes, because we are using mirror drivers, and this is kind of a Microsoft thing, when the mirror drivers kick in, it does shut down the glass area, or the visual effect that you have of that glass business. And certain other things might kick down, like the Windows Tab key, which, what do they call that?
Windows Flip.
Windows Flip, yeah, which is a fancy version of Alt-Tab, shuts down. We purposely shut down some things, like if you have a dialog box up and there's a default button, typically in the old days under Windows XP, they would just bold that default button, and visually you could see that that was the default button, meaning hitting enter would accept it. What they did under Vista was they kind of pulsed it in and out, and you'd see the color pulse in and out, and it's different. But we shut that off because that wasn't necessary. It was just slowing down the process because we were seeing all that text and that type of thing. So we do shut down some of those visual things, which I personally feel are useless to a blind user to begin with. I mean, why Windows tab is no different than Alt tab? Why do one over the other? And the glass effect, I personally think a low vision user would have problems with that anyway. So I don't see those as issues. I know it was stated before, someone was saying that they thought at some point maybe applications will come out and require glass and things like that. I really don't think that's ever going to happen. That, they would be shooting themselves in the foot to do that, because they know that there are applications out there that don't, I mean, there are hardware out there that doesn't support that type of thing. Unless you're talking about some whiz-bang video game or something like that, which isn't going to be accessible anyway. But I really don't see that as being an accessibility issue where an application just flat won't work because Arial Glass is turned off.
Yeah, you might see it in something like an AutoCAD type application or, you
well,
know,
like I said, something very visual that isn't
exactly
going to be accessible anyway.
Well, speaking of visual, Doug, what about I'm getting messaged here in my other ear. How distracting. Anyway, what about the different types of drivers that are available? For example, you know, obviously people have XP drivers on their systems now. You know, are you compatible with both the new Windows Vista drivers as well as the XP video drivers?
Right. We went to great pains to make sure that we do support both environments, because even one of our test machines, when we installed it, that particular video manufacturer didn't support the Vista drivers yet. I don't even know if they do yet. But so we were using the XP drivers on it, which meant it didn't have glass either. But we still supported that. We had some issues with our off-screen model, things like that, that we worked around and made sure that all that stuff now works flawlessly, whether you're running XP drivers or the Real Vista drivers.
Okay, great. We actually have a caller, and then we have a question from Steve on Messenger, so we'll take that after our call. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hello there. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great. Who's this?
Tim from Halifax.
Oh, hello, Tim. How can we help you? How can we help you tonight? You're speaking to GW Micro here.
Actually, I'm not really sure. I don't know if I'm the Microsoft part or not, but I just wanted to find out if you can go back to the old classic menus, like the old Windows 98 look.
God, I hope so.
I'm so tempted to do that. I purposely keep it to the Vista one so I can train myself.
Right.
And I think in the end it will be better. But yes, you can still go back. I'm just doing everything that I can not to go back to give myself a good chance of making sure I can get full benefits
right
of what Vista's offering.
Okay. Is that all, Tim?
That's it.
Okay, great. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead, Daryl, with our question from Messenger Land.
Okay, Steven asks, hey, is it possible to press Insert C to get to the calendar in the new Windows Mail like it was in Outlook?
I wish. No, unfortunately, right now that only requires Outlook. So whether you have Outlook 2000, XP 2003, or 2007, the Insert C will work. But right now, at least, and we plan on doing some more work to investigate this to make sure, but right now, to my knowledge, that is that's not possible.
So is the calendar not accessible, or what?
Well, right now, no. Right now, I would say that the calendar is not accessible, and we are working with Microsoft to see if we can beef up the MSA support or some sort of API approach that we can make that fully accessible. I mean, I'd like to make it as accessible, and I don't think there's anything better out there than WindowEyes with Outlook calendar, and I'd like to be able to do that with the Windows calendar as well.
Great.
Okay,
thanks.
That's great. And we have another caller. They're coming in fast and furious tonight. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Good evening. Hi, this is Steve Bauer out of Wichita, Kansas.
Hello, Steve. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine.
Man, that voice, you know, put Rocky right to sleep.
Well, I hope not.
And that's a good thing. That's a good thing, man. You got a great radio voice. Doesn't he, Doug?
He does.
He does. Go right ahead, Steve.
Kind of a two-part question. Java support, when would that be coming? And do you guys feel that with the release of 6.0 and now 6.1, that you're making any progress in crossing that unbelievable barrier where agencies and states, all they want to push is JAWS?
Great question. Okay, yeah, we'll take that. Can you listen on air?
Absolutely.
Steve? Okay, great. Go ahead, guys.
Well, I've never heard that question before. Well, that's a very common question, a very frustration with us as well. I believe the answer is yes. I think, and we tried to stress this in our announcement today, that WindowWise is the first in so many areas that we've come out with, and our stability that's out there. And that's hurt us in the short term because we aren't able to come out with the whiz-bangy, frilly type features that we're seeing with some of the other products that are coming out. But we've got an extremely strong core within WindowWise. The code itself is rock solid, and I can say that honestly and still sleep tonight. And that allows us to be able to do these things that we're doing and be able to add all this stuff first, come out with Vista first, come out with Office 2007 first, come out with all, you know, terminal services first and PDF support and all Flash support, all these things that we came out with first, we're able to do that. And it's taken some time for people to realize that, but we're kind of, I hate to use Bush, but we're staying the course here, and we're just staying focused with what our principles are, and that is, don't be led by what our competition is doing. Let's stay with grounded with where we're going with it. And we're starting to see that pay off. There's a few more things that we want to do that I think will be the last nail in the coffin. But I think, yes, that we are seeing some turnaround. We are seeing some agencies finally, wait, what? There's something else out there? And they're seriously looking at us now because we are able to do this. And that's why we put out a public beta that anybody can download for WindowWise under Vista, because we want all these JAWS users and HAL users and all these other screen reader users to look at WindowWise. And right now they have no choice. If they want to look at Vista and they want a serious screen reader, they've got to install WindowWise today. And so I think that this will, again, allow users to see firsthand that I'm not just talking and blowing smoke here, that I really do believe WindowWise is the most stable and in many ways more innovative and being able to be out there first with serious applications.
So that is something really to make sure people know, that the beta of Windows Vista is a full installation.
Right, it's a full install. You don't need to be a WindowWise user. You don't. If you've got an installation of Vista, and I don't care what, as long as it's 32-bit, I don't care what flavor of it you have, you can download the full WindowWise install, and it will time out, obviously, after a certain time, but it will be fully functional. You will have everything that we're talking about. Everything will be in that version. The first thing that you had mentioned, the caller had mentioned, I believe, was Java support. That's been a kind of a thorn in my side as well. I've always been so frustrated with Java. Java is, I believe, sort of a problematic regarding accessibility. It's very sluggish. It's too many holes in it. There are so many Java applications that don't work, even if you support the Access Bridge in so many areas. And so it's kind of gone against my philosophy of implementing something when it really doesn't work well. I know our competitors have it, but I also know that they have tons of problems with it. We're sort of at the point, because we need to get it in there, that we'll certainly be adding some support for it. Unfortunately, I'm going to just have to swallow my pride and just accept the fact that we won't be able to support it as well, because it just doesn't have the accessibility support that we really need to make it shine like we've done with other things we've done. So, yes, we will be getting to it, and hopefully not in the too-distant future we'll have support for that.
Okay, great. We have another caller, and I think this will be our last caller for the evening for GW Micro, because we're closely running out of time. And hello, welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hi, Jeff.
Hello.
And guys, this is Mike Massey here in Pueblo, Colorado. And great show. And Doug, I've never spoken to you before. And Aaron, God knows how many times I've spoken to you.
I think today.
My question is this. Since you can no longer hit the start menu in Vista and type R for run and a website, how do you go to websites? Do you open Internet Explorer 7 and do it the old-fashioned way with Control-O, and I'll hang up and listen? Thanks, guys.
I think the easiest thing is just do Windows R. That brings up the run dialog immediately. So that's a quick shortcut, desktop shortcut. Windows R takes you right to the run dialog. And I've had to convert myself from that, too. I'm a Control-Escape-R kind of guy, too, and so I've been forcing myself to do Windows R, and that takes you right there.
All of those Windows keys that existed under XP exist under Vista. So Windows key D to focus the desktop, Windows key B to focus the sys tray, Windows key R to access the run dialog. That all works the same.
Okay. We have yet another caller, and I think we may have time for that. Go ahead, caller. You're on Main Menu Live.
Thank you.
Go right ahead. You need to turn.
Go ahead. Here's my question.
Yeah, you need to turn down your computer, because there's a little bit of a delay there, so you get kind of confused.
My question is, will WindowWise support Vista Enterprise?
All flavors of the 32-bit version of Vista. I don't care what version it is you pick, WindowWise will support it. Yes.
All right. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
And Doug, have a great day. It's been nice being a GW Micro customer and client over the years. Everyone get into IU and PUI stuff.
That's great. Thank you
very much. I appreciate the support.
All right. And, Daryl, we have a question from Messenger. Go right ahead, sir. Daryl, are you there? I think we lost him.
Maybe Steve Bauer's voice put him to sleep.
Yeah. Sorry about that. So while we're waiting for Daryl to come back on here, and as we're winding things down here, is there anything that Doug or Aaron you want to mention in reference to the upgrade experience or anything like that that users should be aware of before actually downloading and installing WindowEyes and or Windows Vista, frankly, for that matter?
If you're upgrading it, whether you're running Windows 2000 XP, Home Pro, or 2003, the installation is pretty much seamless. You just download the it's a single executable that you just a setup that you just run. Automatically update your system, you reboot one time, and you're up in the new version. So it's extremely simple there. And the Vista version, as our both the web page and the README for that talk about, right now in our 6.1 beta, it's not a self-voicing talking install like our production version is. And that's basically because we didn't want to have to mess with that. We didn't want to have to take the time to get that or increase the size of our download because, again, it's open to the world. So we decided not to do that, and in that case, you do need to use Narrator as you're installing WindowEyes under Vista. But, of course, our final 6.1 will be a self-talking install, just like our previous versions have been. But other than having to use Narrator for the installation of WindowEyes under Vista, it also is very seamless. It walks through it, the installs, dialogues look just like you would expect under XP in the past. So, again, it's pretty simple.
Now, okay, so Daryl's having a little bit of computer difficulty, I think, with Skype on his side, and he wants to know, we have about a minute, so if you can do it less than a minute, that'd be great. Does Aeroglass come back on after WindowEyes shuts down?
Right. As soon as the mirror driver shuts down, it will come on. Or if you've got multiple AT products and you're using multiple mirror drivers, as soon as the last mirror driver shuts down, then the Aeroglass will come right back, yes.
Okay, so sighted users should be comfortable with sharing a machine with someone who's using WindowEyes.
Exactly. Again, the impact is only while WindowEyes is running. When WindowEyes is not running, there's no impact at all.
All right, gentlemen. That's it for tonight. And, wow, it's really been a pleasure. Absolutely. We need to have you back. And we really do appreciate you guys coming on tonight and talking all things WindowEyes and Vista. Thanks a lot, guys. It's really, really appreciated.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. We'll be in touch. That brings this week's edition of Main Menu Live to a close. And I want to thank Daryl Shandro for co-hosting with me tonight. It's been a pleasure working with him. And we'll be back next week. We're going to be doing all things Kurzweil. That's right. Paul Hendrickson's going to join us in the Main Menu Live segment. And then the following week, we're going to have Appleon on, the makers of Replay AV. So stay tuned for that. Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week.
If you would like to contact the Main Menu production team or panel of experts heard this evening on Main Menu Live, then simply send an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. If you have suggestions for topics or you have questions that you would like to have addressed on a future edition of Main Menu Live, then email us and we'll do what we can to answer them or cover your suggested topics on a future Main Menu Live. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week on ACB Radio Mainstream for another Main Menu Live.